inside that we need so much. The sight of a touch or the scent of a sand or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories haunt. And to use them to help us.
Talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from outside the U.S. First, dial your access number to the USA. Then, 800-893-0903. If you're a first-time caller, call Art at 702-727-1222. From east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. Or call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye.
It certainly is. In a moment, we're diving right back into Y2K. Leah Danks is here, and she's going to give you something we've never had before, a woman's perspective on what Y2K is all about. She's author of the book, Building Your Ark, Your Personal Survival Guide to the Year 2000 Crisis. So as you can imagine, you're about to go for quite a ride. That's coming up shortly. Listen, for those of you in Chicago that just joined, we are blasting off with a brand new technology tonight. And not only can you now hear me, but you can see me do the show with motion. That's right. Kind of like TV, but not quite yet. This is the latest technology from Intel. We had John Kirby, the Internet Video Program Manager from Intel here last hour. And we had Mark Cuban, president and co-founder of Broadcast.com. And tonight, right now, we are unveiling this new technology so you can actually see me do the program. All you've got to do to get in on this is go to my website, www.artbell.com, and click on download a G2. Now, it's absolutely free. It won't cost you a penny. Free, free, free. And then once you've got that in your computer, you come back again to my website, click on, what does it say? Probably says something like a streaming video. Click on that and you'll go to the page. You click on watch or whatever it is it says there, and poof, there I'm going to be. It's astounding. And we've been working on it for a very long time. Technically, I want to thank Broadcast.com, who's had a first flight engineer here. In fact, I should give his name. I really should give his name. Patrick Seaman has been here from Broadcast.com, patiently waiting through the miles of wires that I've got in order to install all of this brand new technology. So if you want to see it, I'm telling you, get up there and get G2. It's free. Free o' charge. And then you can even watch for free. That is, unless the government gets in our way and decides they're going to charge for the Internet. All right, anyway, we're off into the frightening world. It is a frightening world, too, because it's the unknown of Y2K in a moment with Leah Danks. I wonder what a woman's perspective is. It's very likely going to be a little different than a man's. Anyway, we're about to find out. Well, there are thousands of you out there by now, and the numbers are going up fast, accessing my video feed, which carries audio with it. And so you will be seeing me with this weird little cup with a straw in it. Well, you see, I wear a headset, and I drink coffee while I'm on the air. I drink coffee, and I smoke cigarettes, too, by the way. And so don't write to me about smoking cigarettes. I don't want to hear it. Anyway, I have a straw in my cup because, obviously, one cannot put a cup to their mouth when they have a microphone sitting 1 inch away from it. So that's why I'm doing that, in case you're wondering. Visually. It's visual. Now, in a moment, Leah Danks, one quick announcement. The following announcement is not a commercial announcement. All right? It is not a commercial announcement. You know I'm in love with time travel. You know I'm in love with a movie called Somewhere in Time. And that's putting it mildly. I'm really just simply in love with that movie. I always have been. If you've never seen it, you've got to see Somewhere in Time. It's awesome. And I've been a fan for so long and thought about it so hard. In Somewhere in Time, you may recall, it was the Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island in Michigan. God, what a hotel. And I am hooked enough on all of that that I am going to the Somewhere in Time weekend, October 29th through the 31st. Ramona and I are going to stay in the Grand Hotel for the reunion of those who feel as I do about that movie. So this is no commercial announcement, I'm just telling you. And this is the first time I've ever been motivated by a movie, so motivated that I would actually do something like this. Somewhere deep inside, that movie has great meaning for me. I don't know. And I going to Mackinac Island and going to the Grand Hotel is just, it has, it's a compulsion. It's a compulsion. All right, here we go. If you're ready, let me warn you. Let me give my standard warning, and that is, if this kind of information scares you, if you have children in the room, I would say, tune out. Leah Danks is going to talk about Y2K. Y2K, at one extreme, is very, very scary. At the other extreme, it may be laughable. And we're going to discuss with Leah which extreme she thinks, or where in between she thinks all of this is going to fall. It's pretty scary stuff. I have begun investigating as a result of Gary North on my own, independent of Gary North. After Gary scared the hell out of me, I went out and I began investigating myself, talking to my bank and my power company and my gas company and people like that. And I scared the hell out of myself. That's why I'm continuing to pursue this. Leah Danks, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm a little on edge about this whole thing.
Okay.
That's how I am. Otherwise, I have recovered some health I did not have yesterday. Boy, I had a bad day yesterday. Leah, how about you? How are you? I know you were not so well when I spoke to you yesterday.
I think we both were under the weather, and I'm doing much better, too.
Good. You know Gary North, don't you?
Yes.
Friends?
Well, not really. Just acquaintances.
Just acquaintances.
Mm-hmm.
You are the person that Gary has spoken of each time he's been on my program. He said, look, there's a web page up that basically is for women and by a woman, and it's a woman's perspective on Y2K. Is that what your web page is, do you think?
Basically, I think he may be speaking of another friend of his.
That may be.
Yeah, but he saw my book when it was in its very roughest stages via a mutual friend. And I didn't even know he had seen it.
Building your ARC,
yes.
Your Personal Survival Guide to the Year 2000 Crisis, right? That is the book.
Yes.
How long have you had that out?
Since October.
Since October. Not very long, then.
No.
Okay, Leah, let's begin at the beginning, I guess, and that is, in the range that I discussed, the extremes of ha-ha-ha, Y2K is absolutely nothing. It's pig in a poke. It's scared a whole bunch of people. From that bottom perspective to, say, a number 10, where Y2K disrupts civilization for a long time, if not permanently, where are you in that range, in what you think is going to happen, Leah?
Well, let me precede everything I say by just remarking that I don't set myself up as an expert, per se. I'm an average citizen and a housewife and a mother, and I'm trying to give people that perspective. However, I have spent hundreds of hours researching the subject and doing the things you just mentioned that you had done, and the thing that has concerned me the most is the wide variance of information that you get. And it's that uncertainty that led me to write the book, because I can't get one version of this whole process from anyone. Everyone has an opinion on it, but I can't get any clear facts that reassure me that much.
Well, opinions are like other body parts.
Right.
I listened to Gary. I had Gary on the show long before Y2K became a national awareness issue, which it's well on its way to becoming right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he scared the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this really can't be. And so I began asking, you know, my bank, my electric company, my gas company, and the answers I got, without being specific, were not comforting at all.
Right.
Not at all. And so what did you do? Who did you talk to?
Okay. Would you like to know the little story of why I wrote the book?
Yes, I would.
Okay. About 3 years ago, a professor at the college in the town that I live, whose opinion I respect, handed me a sheaf of papers. And he said, please read this now. And something in his tone of voice caused me to go ahead and read it. And it was the computer printout of the early version of Ed Yurden's book, Time Bomb 2000.
Oh, yes.
When it was, you know, very early on. And I studied history for about 35 years. It's kind of the link that Gary and I found. He's a doctor of history. And, you know, when you do that, you start seeing the larger picture, and how down through the centuries, humanity's always gone right up to the edge and fallen over sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I saw what Ed Yurden was showing in this, the possibilities, I began to be concerned. But at that time, this was nearly 3 years ago, nobody else was concerned.
Well, all right, I've had Ed Yurden on, and I asked him the same scale question that I just
mm-hmm.
asked you. And he said, well, if Gary is a 9, then I forget what he said, I'm about a 7 or something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, asking you, just
okay.
on your own personal knowledge, where are you in that scale?
Well, let's say the optimistic part of me wants to be a 5.
A 5.
Okay. The pessimistic part of me is probably a 9 also.
Oh, really?
And I vary between the two, and that's the hard part. I wrote this book in response to my own need to reassure myself and take action, because I do think the worst enemy all of us have is fear.
Where are you, by the way, Leah? Where are you?
I'm in Arkansas.
You're in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of in a rural area.
Yes, I live in a small town, outside a small town.
Have you always been there, or did you move there?
Well, I'm a Texas gal, and we've been here 18 years, and we've lived in the country, basically, for 18 years. And I've learned the hard way, through a lot of power outages and cold ice storms and such, how to take care of myself in non-electric situations, you might say, you know, in very simple living. It isn't hard, but there are some crucial things you need to know.
Oh, and we're going to get into those, believe me, in great detail. People right now are craving the kind of information that I know you have in your book and you're going to be dispensing tonight. They're really craving that, because people are scared. People are naturally scared of the unknown. I'm in that same camp. I'm kind of scared of this. And I really don't want things to collapse, but I have this little side of me that's saying they're gonna.
Yeah. Well, I do think that fear of the unknown is our worst enemy, and the thing I've always done in the face of something like that is take some action. And I began to prepare a list of things I thought my family and myself would need to know and have and do. And I would talk to friends and family about it, and they all laughed at me. But the interesting thing, Art, was at the end of the conversation, invariably they'd say, well, can I have a copy of your list?
They laughed at you, huh?
Sure. But they wanted the list.
Are they still laughing?
No.
No, I didn't.
And so I realized that there was a demand for this kind of information. And the thing that really got me going on it was about this time last year, actually. I started looking for some of the resources I knew from back in the 70s and the 80s when I was doing a lot of simple living. And I couldn't find them. You know, they just sort of atrophied over the years, and as we got into the 90s, a lot of that back-to-the-land movement just went by the wayside.
Well, like what?
Well, magazines, catalogs, books, things that I remembered from those years being on the bookshelves. And so I had to do some digging, and it took me about 3 months to find the catalogs and the sources and the equipment suppliers that I thought would be a lot easier to find. And so I realized that the average person coming along maybe a little late in the game is just not going to have time to do all that research.
Is it late in the game now?
Yes. I think it is.
Is let me ask you the standard question. According to all that you have researched, and I understand that you're just a housewife, but you've spent hundreds of hours researching, as you already mentioned.
Yes.
So that puts you way ahead of most of us in what you know.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to have power? Are we going to have phones? Are we going to have the internet? Are we going to have radio stations? Is Art Bell going to be on the air? You know, all of answer all of that.
Well, I would hope I could answer it, but you know, all I could give you is an opinion again, and
that's all I'm
frustrating.
Asking. That's all I'm asking for. Now, again, we'll give the caveat. You've done hundreds of hours of research. That puts you way ahead of me, and
well,
I've done some.
Let's just say I'm not real optimistic, because we are talking about an incredibly complex system. And I read something fascinating off the internet. I have a friend who spends a lot of time cruising the net and emailing me pertinent information.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent me a fascinating piece of information the other day, and it was about systems tolerance. And it said basically that a complex system can usually operate and continue functioning with a fault tolerance of about 1%, which isn't very high.
A fault tolerance, in other words, any complex system will continue chugging along.
Yeah, it can have things going wrong.
Until you get to about 1% fault rate.
And then it starts having problems. And so this guy went through a long, you know, fairly technical article talking about fault tolerance, and at the end he just sort of summarized it and said, basically, everything's going to have to work to about 99%.
And when we are well into this, January 1st, 2000, now I fully understand that Y2K is not a singular day event, something most people haven't quite come to grips with yet. Last half of this year, the first half of next year, will contain the bulk of the trouble. I've read that about 8% or maybe a little more will occur actually on the day.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. In my book, I list some dates to be aware of that might be helpful. Now, you know, at the end of March, the governments of Japan, Canada, and the state of New York will roll their computers over to their new fiscal year, which will include the first 3 months of the year 2000.
That's the end of March?
Yes. Actually, it's April Fool's Day.
The 1st of April?
Mm-hmm.
Ha, ha, ha.
Uh-huh.
So, let me get this again. Japan?
Yeah.
And
Canada.
Canada and New York State?
Yeah.
Well,
and nobody really knows what to expect. I understand that the government of Canada has been warning citizens to prepare.
The government of Canada has mobilized its own military.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, at least they're doing that. In my opinion, they're facing it a little more honestly than we are.
As you know, or must know, there are many states now that are beginning to mobilize their own military at the state level, the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
So that is going on. All right, Leah, hold on. This is going to be an interesting night, because Leah really is here to tell you how to prepare. And we're going to address people in the city, people in the country. We're going to try and talk about as many of you as we can. So if you want to know what to do about 2000, stay right where you are.
From the Kingdom of Nye, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. From east of the Rockies, call Art at 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, at 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may fax Art at area code 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
Once again, here I am. And again, everybody, we have live video running, streaming on the Internet right now. And you can see it. Just go to my website, download the G2 player, and take a look. What can I say? It's free. You've got a computer, it's free. Now, in the first couple of days, or the first few days of this, remember, we're doing something entirely new, and we may change things, we may make adjustments, so sort of bear with us. This is experiment, brand new technology, and we may make changes as we go along, so kind of bear with us. Leah Danks is in Arkansas. Leah Danks has a website that you can look at. Leah Danks has a book that you can buy. And all of it you can see on my website. She is author of the book, Building Your Ark, Your Personal Survival Guide to the Year 2000 Crisis. And here she is again. Hi, Leah.
Hi.
Okay. I guess, Leah, if you think that, or you worry as I do, that it may be on the more difficult side, regarding what we think is going to happen, let's get down to what you do. How big is your family, Leah?
Well, my husband and I have two grown children, but his parents are elderly, and we have to look out for them. He has a sister and a brother-in-law, and a brother and a sister-in-law, and their kids. So there's about 10 or 12 of us all told in the family. And we're going to preparing for all of us, hopefully.
Are you all in Arkansas?
Not all of us. Those that can be here at that time will be here. And he has a brother in the Air Force, so he may not be able to come, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, his husband's mother is very much aware of this and very concerned also, so her help has been invaluable.
All right. What would you recommend to anybody, everybody out there? I guess the advice you're going to give would be somewhat different for a city dweller than it would a country person, right?
I have divided the information in my book into three sections, a lot of it anyway, rural, suburban, and urban.
Okay.
Because people have different needs in different locations.
They sure do.
I spent one very bitter winter in Chicago, and I saw how people suffered and struggled in that city. And many rural people, particularly in the area that I live, are already living in a very simple lifestyle, or they can revert to that very easily. So they don't have quite as much to do in that sense. They have better options to some extent.
For how long? I guess maybe we better qualify it. In other words, if Y2K... really lasts a long time. Let's say it lasts 2 weeks. I think everything would be all right. There would be disruptions. Some of us might be on vacation, like myself. If it lasts a month, we still might be all right. But if it lasts 6 months or a year or 5 years, then we're in big, big trouble.
Yeah, and basically all I can say and do say in my book is you have to make that determination. That is a huge responsibility every person has to face. No one can tell you, you know, how much you should store. But I look at my, you know, my family, and I think, how can I look at them later knowing I could have done something as simple as just making a few provisions?
Well, then maybe you telling us what you have done
will
help us understand how serious you think it's going to be.
Well, my reasoning is this. When my daughter was very little, we nearly lost her due to dehydration. In a couple hours, she had the flu and was throwing up. And little children can dehydrate and die from a lack of water in hours. So I think that water is one of the most critical and crucial items. And most people in this country have not a clue about how to procure clean water because we just turn on the tap.
I was going to say, I know how to get it. I go turn on the tap.
Well, what we don't realize is that over 50,000 people a day die from waterborne diseases around the world.
Oh.
That's a huge number of people.
That is.
And it's a major problem in most other countries, you know, third world countries. And we in the Western world just don't ever think about it. So we're not really prepared to find potable or drinkable water.
You know, you really are right. I'm very fortunate. I live very far into the country, and I have a water well.
Yeah, well, you're set, then.
Well, I hope I'm set.
Yeah.
But a good well is
worth everything, you know.
If you were in the city, and you go and turn on the tap, and there's no water...
Right.
Then what?
Well, then you better hope you've stored some, or that you have a good filter. And the thing is, you need to be wise about this. You need to inform yourself about what you need, because there are some water sources that have to be not only filtered but purified. And what's the difference between a filter and a purifier?
Well, if I'm in Chicago in an apartment, Leah,
mm-hmm.
and I turn on the tap and there's no water,
mm-hmm.
where the hell do I go?
Well, that's a problem if you haven't made preparations.
Let's say I have. Now, water is pretty bulky to store.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So how much water can I store in an apartment? I can fill my bathtub or something.
Yeah. Well, that is one thing I'm suggesting. But a person needs approximately 1 gallon, absolute minimum, 2 gallons preferable a day for every person in your family. And then you have to simply decide how many days you think you might be without it.
That's for drinking or that's...
Drinking and cooking and, you know, bathing.
Some sponge bath or something.
Right, yeah. But here's the thing that I'm looking at. You can try and store water, and that's a good idea, but a good water filter, I'm not talking about the little cheap things you get at Walmart.
Yeah.
I'm talking about a good expedition-type survival water filter, which are getting to be, you know, in short supply now. And one of those you can go anywhere just about and purify just about any kind of water.
Meaning I could go to...
Well, you could go down to the pond in the park, or you could go down to the swimming pool, or... something. Now, if you're getting water out of really seriously polluted sources, and rivers particularly that have chemical factories or sewage upstream, then you have to use a purifier, and there's a number of different purifiers. I go into this in quite a bit of detail in my book because it's so crucial. But you got to know your water source, and you got to know how to treat each time.
Let's say I'm going to a river. I mean, there are rivers available to millions of people. So you go down to the river, and you fill something up with water and take it home.
Okay. You've got two choices. You can boil it for at least 10 minutes if you have the fuel, you know, to spare, and then strain it and probably survive drinking that.
Hmm.
Or you can get a really good water purifier and run it through that. But
so
water
boiling...
purifiers don't purify a whole lot of water. They're not nearly as much as plain filters.
So then boiling will work. I mean, even polluted water...
Well, it will not take out, like, heavy metals, you know, anything like that, no. But for a temporary survival thing, you might get by on it.
Huh.
If there's sewage, if there's certain... I don't know, you know, how bad the water is. The best thing is a really good filter.
A really good filter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how good does the filter have to be? I mean, you're right. I've seen these little countertop dealy floppers that people get.
Well, they just take the chlorine out of your water, basically, and the bad smells and taste. And they're not equipped to take out, you know, heavy metals. Virus is one of the biggest problems, viral contamination.
Viruses.
Yeah. There are certain other substances you can put into your water to help purify it. And, you know, it's a complex subject, and you have to inform yourself about it and then decide what's the most optimum thing for you. And the problem with all of this is that you can't tell another person exactly what to do because everybody's situation is so unique.
No, but you can give good tips like you're giving right now.
Yeah, I mean, just the best thing I can say about water is store as much as you can. And then get a filter just in case as a backup.
Well, how likely is it, do you think, Leah, that we will be without water? What is water delivery to our faucets dependent on?
Well, water delivery depends on electricity.
Okay.
And basically that's it. I mean, you can still, if you're on a septic tank like we are, you can still flush, but you got to have the water. You can use your drains, but the incoming water supply can be contaminated so easily. I live in a rural area, and nearly every week there's a boil water order in some little of the local, you know, rural water systems, because contaminants leak in and things like that happen. So you cannot be assured of having clean water in times of you know, public problems.
So in other words, everybody should be as prepared as possible to, if not store water, because that's gonna be hard. I mean, you can only keep your bathtub full so long if you're in. I'm thinking of city people. We're talking to a lot of
you
city people.
You want a really
right
sneaky
now.
Tip?
Sure.
I'll give you a really neat tip.
Please.
Take those 2-liter pop bottles, you know, the big plastic ones.
Oh, yes.
Wash them out, dry them, get them real clean. Fill them up with water, good water. Put just a drop of Clorox in it, pure Clorox, nothing else in it.
One drop?
Just a drop or two is all you need. Freeze them in your freezer.
Freeze them?
Fill them up 3/4 full so that when the water expands, it won't burst them. And stack them in your freezer. And it does 2 things. And you can also do that with good broth, you know, like soup broth and soup base and everything. But that frozen water, if the electricity goes off, will keep your food for a week or so before it thaws. And then when it does thaw, you can drink the water.
Oh, that's brilliant. So, in other words, you serve 2 purposes at once.
Yeah, I just love that idea. I wish I could say I'd found it. But
no, that's all right. You gave it to us. That's a brilliant idea. How many... Now, in a typical refrigerator-type freezer, you would get 1 or 2 in there, or maybe 3 at the most.
Yeah, if you've got a chest freezer or an upright, you're in better shape, you know. But I would say like 3 or 4 in a, or 6 in a, you know. I mean, you're going to have to, you know, put your food around it. You won't put as much food in there, but you know, there's a lot of water there.
So that would keep your food cool at
for
least
a few days, uh-huh.
For a few days.
Mm-hmm. So you could eat it up.
Oh, that's brilliant.
You wouldn't lose it.
That really is brilliant. I'm
yeah,
going
to
do
to
that
put
myself.
Stuff like that in my book to give people, you know, different and unique ideas and things they just wouldn't have thought of. I found some of the neatest stuff out there when I went digging. And if somebody didn't take the time to look all this up, they just wouldn't have found it.
Gary North talks a little bit on, you know, he scares me. He says, look, if Y2K goes on for, you know, say more than a month or 2 months, he said, then the system may come to a point where it can't recover. Now, I had, you know, a guest from Intel and a guest from Broadcast.com on,
mm-hmm.
and they both thought that there would be disruptions,
mm-hmm.
but that there would be workarounds. In other words,
mm-hmm.
people would go out, electric companies would slowly get themselves back into biz, your sewage would begin to run again, mm-hmm. whatever. There'd be workarounds.
It depends, I think, on a number of very complex things. Here's the scenario that I can foresee. If this all comes to a head, let's say, I know we're going to have some, I believe, some up and down problems all year. But if it comes to a huge head in January, that's the middle of winter. And here's the situation. We all take it for granted that our 911 systems, our hospitals, all of these places we depend upon, the fire department, are going to be fully staffed and manned and ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
But these are folks just like you and me, and they have children at home, and they have families. And if they have to leave a cold, empty house, or, you know, dark house, with their children at home, and if they haven't prepared and they don't have food and water, do you think they're going to show up at work?
Well,
there's a problem there.
Mostly no.
No, because maybe they can't even get through the streets. Who knows? So we cannot totally depend on all of our, quote, rescue operations to be fully operational just because of the nature of the situation.
All right,
so
then,
we're
on our own.
Yeah, we're going to have to, each person, each family needs to take themselves out of the loop to the point that they can take care of themselves for a few weeks. Think of the relief this will be to our infrastructure as it tries to bring itself back together.
All right, what about this, Leah? Yes, the more people that are prepared, the better off we're going to be. But what about, again, if you're in the city,
mm-hmm.
and you go into the can and do what you're going to do, you flush and it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if you flush and it isn't gone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I've also got something in my book about that. It's waste disposal is the, you know, the subject nobody wants to talk about.
Got to talk about it.
And I know it's crucial because infectious diseases and plagues and various, you know, serious problems can arise very quickly.
That's
in
right.
situations. A waste building up in cities is one of the most dangerous things in any kind of garbage strike and so on. And there is a very simple home composting toilet you can make that works perfectly. I've used it for years. It's simple to do. You just take a 6-gallon bucket, you put some peat moss or some sawdust or some plain old dirt in it, and you do your duty, and you cover it up. Now, you have to have some place to put this if you have a yard.
Ultimately.
Yeah, ultimately you have to make a compost pile with it, and nature will do the rest.
Or if you're in a city, you could take it to a park.
Yeah, you could, and make a compost pile there. You know, everybody could do that. This is going to require an enormous amount of cooperation for everybody to get through this. I saw this in Chicago that very cold winter, that people were forced to help each other just to get through.
Well, I saw one good thing happen in Chicago. It's interesting you should mention Chicago, because Chicago last year, through part of the state of Illinois and Indiana, people got stuck on the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
It was bitterly, horribly cold, and there were literally tens of thousands of cars that came to a screeching halt because some accidents occurred. Ice was on the road. Nobody could move. These people, thousands of them, were stuck out there, running out of gas, trying to run their cars to get the heater to go. And a good thing happened. People helped each other, Leah.
I'm hoping that's what will happen.
Do you really believe, though, that if it... have you seen... You know, there's a movie I talk about all the time. About the power going out. Have you seen that movie? It's been running on HBO or something.
I have not, and I need to look at it. I haven't seen it. I think if we can keep the power grid up, there's hope. I think if the grid goes down, we have a serious problem, just simply. Because our society is addicted to electricity, and we've had electricity as long as anyone alive now can remember. And we don't know what it's like to live without it.
Well, I have advised people, Leah, to go to their breaker panels in their home and turn the main breaker off.
Right.
And then spend about an hour walking through their house,
right,
preferably at night, and they'll get an idea of what
right.
it's going to be like.
And I advise them to do it for a weekend.
A whole weekend?
Well, do a run, a dry run, and see how well you could last.
In other words, do your own personal Y2K test.
Yeah, just, I mean, run your computer ahead, you know, run your household ahead. And see what you need to do. That won't take long to figure out.
Leah, you know what? It would kill me.
Well, yeah.
I have electronics everywhere here, and it's like an electronic mausoleum, you know.
Kind of like my husband. He does the same thing.
So,
well, you know, I'm addicted to my electronics. I love my VCRs and my, God knows, my washer dryer. You know, I don't want to do without those. But I have done it, and I found out you can do it.
All right, we'll talk more about that when we come back. Leah Danks is my guest. I expect you would want to see her website. Well, we've got a link to it. Just go to my website, www.artbell.com. Go on down the web page until you see the name Leah Danks, and click on her website. Her book is Building Your Ark, Your Personal Survival Guide to the Year 2000 Crisis, and you're going to hear a lot of valuable tips tonight. By the way, to get a copy of this program, which might keep you afloat, you can call 1-800-917-4278. But most of all, when you go to my site tonight, get G2 and watch our video. We'll be right back.
With Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. To reach Art from outside the U.S., first dial your access number to the USA. then 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
This is the best phasing I've ever heard done, ever by anybody, anywhere, anytime. Robert Sampler, thank you. You're a guy who really knows what he's doing. My guest is Leah Dykes. We're talking about Y2K and what you can do to get ready for it. And I've got a pretty provocative fax that I'm going to try and answer, and I'm going to get Leah to answer when we get back in just a moment. Stay right where you are. Back to Leah Dykes, who has written a book, which you might well get hold of, called Building Your Ark, Your Personal Survival Guide to the Year 2000 Crisis. All right. Here, this is actually addressed to me, Leah, but I'm going to let you tackle it, too. It says, Art, what are you going to say to your listeners when the substitute brown stuff here doesn't hit the fan on January 1st, 2000? You know, I'm open-minded to this situation, but suppose everything's okay. You got people listening to you and might spend their last dime on MREs and such for nothing. I would think your guest book better make its million by the 1st of January, because if everything turns out okay, the book is just wasted pulp. Dave in Houston, Texas. What do you say to that?
Oh, I hope he's right.
I hope he's right.
My fondest hope is that nothing at all happens. I wouldn't be happier.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I'll tell my audience this right now. I'm no expert in this. I only know what I know from having talked to the people I've talked to. I am preparing. I suggest that you, if you are my personal friend, this is the advice I'm giving my personal friends and my family. And so I've debated heavily with myself about what my presence on the air should be about this, Leah. And I'm giving the advice on the air that I give to my friends and my own family. And I don't know what else I can say. If nothing happens, you know, good. Now, here's just one other fact, and then we'll dive back into it. This says, this is from Charles Osman, who's been a guest on the show. He says, Hi, Art. Thought you might be interested to know I was a featured guest speaker at the 8th Biannual Futurist Conference on Telecommunications in Los Angeles, October 14th and 15th, specifically on the subject of Y2K implications. It was an invitation-only RSVP event. I sat on the International Policy Review and Imperatives Board, along with a number of individuals, including a senior member of the World Bank. This event was attended by two U.S. congressmen, and a number of CEOs and policymakers from the U.S. and abroad. What was most interesting here at the event was that the entire focus over 8 hours of presentations was in the arenas of risk modeling, risk containment, and liability exposure. Many of the attendees and some of the speakers were from major insurance providers and banks. If anything, I was mildly chastised after my presentation from two conservative in my calculations and projections on the interaction of economic and strategic implications of Y2K. So when they get behind closed doors, Leah, the big guys seem like they're concerned. And if they're concerned, I think I'm concerned.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the President's Council and the Senate subcommittee came out with a report yesterday or day before. And they're concerned, and they're chastising the various government agencies. Some are ready, they say. Some will be ready, they hope, and some will not. And
well,
at very high levels of the government and of other, you know, industry and business, they're very concerned.
I know. These are things that somehow a lot of people don't want to hear. They just simply don't want to hear it, and they don't believe. I've been an advocate, Leah, of... It wouldn't cost our government that much money if our government would provide a round-trip ticket to some third-world country of the person's choice for 1 week, and every citizen got to go visit a third-world country and see how everybody else lives. It would change the way people think about this country entirely. We take so much for granted, Leah.
Oh, I know. I know
so
that's
much.
One of our weaknesses, is that we just do not want to admit that change can come. And this is what Gary North and I discussed briefly, being both historians at heart, is when you look back over the long, you know, time of history, every great civilization has always believed they're the latest, most modern, the most powerful, and that they will go on forever.
Bulletproof.
Yeah,
Here's one that says, Art, Leah was talking about water filters. Would you ask her about salt water, please? What would you say to somebody about
there
salt?
There actually is a salt water filter that can be used on boats.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, it's neat, and it's not cheap, but you can get it. It's listed in my book. It's in a catalog. You can get it.
You can get it.
It's still available.
So you can. How much salt water can a person convert to drinking water?
I'd have to look that up in the book. I don't have that in my head.
All right, that's all right.
Yeah.
Here's another one for you. Somebody writes, guess what? Yesterday, the three major networks, all three of them, at dinner time, did a story on Y2K. And I've asked everybody I've talked to about this, Leah. I was on this, and I've been on it for a long time. All of a sudden, after the new year, it's like somebody, boom, threw a switch, and all of a sudden, the mainstream media began to get involved all at once.
Yeah. CNN started January 1st with a feature which I have taped up here on the Y2K. I thought it was a very well-reasoned 30-minute feature, but yeah, they started about then. And when you get on the net and you surf around and you see what's there, there are people who are very serious and very experienced, who are very responsible, and they're concerned. And then you see, you know, every other thing from the fringes on out. But then you wonder why the media is not really approaching this more seriously, because a lot of the things are done very tongue-in-cheek, and they're making anyone who is prudent enough to prepare a little bit, they make them look like radical,
nuts.
Wild-eyed survivalists.
I know it. I know it.
And they lump everybody into that label, and, you know, the churches for years have asked their people to prepare for hard times. The Mormon Church, you know, is now telling their people to prepare for 2 years, not 1 year.
They are?
I just heard this yesterday from a Mormon. And I've studied with him actually recently because I figured I had a lot to learn. And turns out they're real experts at it. And if anyone has a friend who's a Mormon, go talk to them, because they have experience in putting up for hard times, because you never know when you're going to lose your job. There's going to be a flood. Something could happen.
So in other words, a lot of the preparations that we might discuss tonight, Leah, would do you well no matter what happens to you in life if Y2K comes to a bunch of nothing.
You're not asking anyone to buy a lot of exotic equipment. Basically, the things you would put aside would be some extra water, some water purification supplies,
mm-hmm.
some food, a few health supplies, and I would like to come a minute about the health situation.
All right, can we first touch on food?
Yeah, in just a minute. But the thing is, you can eat all this. You can drink all this. It's not like you're going to be out of a huge amount of money for useless items. So the things that we're asking people to prepare for are practical.
You can eat your investment.
You betcha.
All right, now I have really cool companies like J. Michael Stevens that do a tremendous job on prepared food with 10-year plus shelf life.
Right.
You know, that's great if you can afford it.
Right.
Now, if you can't afford it, I still want to give people advice.
Right.
And so, by the way, does my sponsor. So, what could you do if you can't afford to go buy storable food? Then what are your alternatives?
Yeah. Okay. I did my four food chapters last of all. They were the hardest. And I struggled with them. I have a long history in food preparation, and I've worked in the industry before, in the natural food industry. And I love to cook, so that's my specialty.
Okay.
And
good.
Basically, I gave four basic plans. I don't give a lot of detailed instructions because people have to decide how they're going to do it. But there's four ways that they can do it. They can create, let me get the list here. I'm looking at the book.
Well, I know this, Leah. When hurricanes are on the way, people go and empty grocery stores in 2 days or less.
Yeah, see, Sam Walton with Walmart started this way back when he began to have just-in-time inventorying, and this allowed a merchandiser or a retailer not to have to stock a lot of products. And so every couple of days, they get trucks full of products. And they don't even have a very large back room anymore where they store things. So in a couple of days, your grocery store is going to be empty. And the thing is, in a couple of days, so is the grocery store's warehouse. Because our entire food supply system now depends on just-in-time delivery. which depends on the global positioning satellites for the trucking industry, which depends on the fuel being, you know.
Boy, you're covering a lot of ground there. What do you, remember to talk right into that phone for me.
Yeah.
There you. Oh, thank you. GPS.
Yeah.
What do we know about GPS?
Well, I think it's way on up there in the sky, and we can't easily get up there to fix it, and it is running on embedded chips. And so basically, the best thing I've been able to figure out and find out is that nobody really knows what's going to happen. The global positioning system, as I understand it, was due for a shift and a check, and I'm not real up on all of the details of it, in August. And it's that multi-satellite system that controls the reception of all navigation information.
I can tell you this, and this is a fact, because I know.
What's that?
I've got a GPS receiver that I got some time ago, a couple years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I've already been notified it will cease working January 1st,
right.
2000.
I have a friend who's a trucker, and his whole truck is more electronic than my office. And I don't know how he'd get information, you know, if the GPS goes down. But August 31st is the date to look for on that one.
And here's another one. I got a fax the other day from a trucker who said that he and his truck sat for hours and hours and hours at a pickup point, and they could see what they were supposed to pick up. It was sitting right there, piles and piles and piles of stuff that were supposed to be loaded on their semis. And he said the computers were down, and until the computer said the food was there, it didn't exist, and they couldn't touch it.
Yeah.
Really weird, huh?
And there have been some, and I think this is criminal in a sense, there have been some occasions of computers indicating that certain food was out of date when it wasn't, and it was destroyed, you know, tons of food and things like this.
Oh, my.
Yeah, wasteful, things like that. And so, you know, our food, whole food supply system is extremely vulnerable, much more so than anybody realizes, and I have a lot of information about that.
So your best tips to people, you said you had four areas?
Yeah. Well, there's four ways that they can store. You can purchase a prepackaged food plan, like you were saying. This is food that's put up under nitrogen packing and you know, to last for many, many years.
Yes.
That isn't actually that necessary if we know it's going to be a couple of years in the future, you know, this year, next year, maybe the next that we need to prepare for. Then most foods will get properly packaged in dry environments. Then it'll last that long. You don't have to necessarily get professionally packed foods, but you do have to know what you're doing. So that's what I try to do, is educate people about how to do it yourself.
Well, if you don't know what you're doing, you can kill yourself.
Yeah, you can if you eat, if you try to can foods and you do it the wrong way. But basically, most foods, as they're packed and stored, I learned in my years in the business, even when the date goes out, if it's not meat or dairy, it's not that deadly.
Okay.
You know, you can, if you've kept it cool and dry, it'll last. But you can use a combination. You can get some prepacked foods and some foods locally. I'm a big advocate of the natural wholesale warehouses, because anybody can buy from them, and you can get bulk seeds and beans and grains really cheap.
And they store for quite a while?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's not that hard to put them up. And you have to collect containers, and you have to get what's called oxygen absorber packets.
Oh.
And they're sold in a lot of the catalogs I show, and those absorb the oxygen in the container, and that is what, of course, allows mold and bugs to grow. So in a really dry, oxygen-free environment,
interesting,
they're pretty safe.
What kind of containers would you use?
Anything that's got a really tight lid and that, you know, bugs and rodents can't get into. You can buy the 6-gallon buckets. They are plastic poly buckets, and they're made especially for food storage.
What would you, for example, rice, would that store?
Yeah, brown rice still has the hull on it. It has a lot of the fat in it. Of course, it has all of the vitamins, too. And brown rice is not considered to be a really good storer. But I think for a couple of years, if it's stored in a dry enough environment, you could certainly eat it.
How about Uncle Ben's converted?
Yeah. Any of those things at the grocery store have been pretty highly processed. You know, white rice is just starch. That's all it is.
Uh-huh.
And you can go in the grocery store and basically get everything you need. You know, most canned goods will last a year.
Now, you can, in other words, you can go to the grocery store right now and get what you need.
Yeah, I mean, most canned goods will last a year or more if they're kept in a reasonably cool environment.
How about a jar of peanut butter?
Yeah, it probably would. probably would. In other words, you're not going to have the highest quality, maybe the best tasting food, but it's not going to kill you.
Whereas when you buy jelly, I'm only now talking about what I know. You buy jelly, if you don't keep it in the refrigerator after you've opened it,
it's another thing.
It gets moldy.
Let me tell you what we're going to do, and I think this is pretty sneaky. If you have space in the backyard, get an old abandoned refrigerator or freezer, sink it in the ground, have a hole dug, sink it in the ground, cover it over the top with a couple of bales of hay, and you've got a 50-degree cooler there.
No matter where you are in the country?
Well, yeah. Yeah, the ground maintains a reasonably cool temperature down there, and if you dig, sink it down 4 or 5 feet in the ground, down in there, you've got a little miniature cellar.
God, that's a great idea.
Yeah. And just keep the kids away from it, because the door on it, is dangerous. You'd have to keep it covered up and watch it.
Well, you've got it buried, so the door isn't going to be available. If it's down, as you point out, a few feet,
right.
It's
and then
just
you just cover it up with a couple of bales of hay for insulation, and, you can keep a few things out there for a few days.
Oh, I see. So, in other words, the hay goes over the hole. You don't fill it in with dirt.
Yeah, you do. You fill it in with dirt around the edge. Say you've got just an old refrigerator.
No. But what I'm saying is you fill the sides, yes, but you don't fill...
Fill the top, no.
And
I'm talking about laying that fridge on the side.
And you're still... I understand.
Yeah.
And you're saying that it will maintain, because it's down in the earth, even though the top is open...
Well, you're going to cover that top, the door. You're
with
going to
hay.
Cover the door. It'll open like a chest freezer.
I've got you.
Yeah, and you'll just stack bales of hay on that for insulation to keep it cool.
And so...
And you just move them aside when you open it up.
So you're telling me it'll stay at a constant 50-some-odd degrees?
Yeah, that's the temperature in the ground. And, of course, in the winter, it'll be a lot colder. You probably won't need to use it. But, there's a lot of parts of this country that don't have bitter winters. And keeping food cool and food poisoning is going to be, an issue. I think waterborne poisoning, and dysentery will be a bigger problem. But, you can kill yourself with bad water or bad food pretty easily, and you just really need to read some information about all of this.
And then, of course, if you should get bad or tainted food, and you get sick, really sick, and services are down, then you're in really deep doo-doo because you can't call a doctor. You can't go rushing off to the hospital.
Right.
In all likelihood, it's jammed and you might be on your own.
Exactly.
So we'll talk a little bit about what you might do if you do get sick. And there's a lot out there with special problems. In fact, I've got a report I'm going to read here in a moment on the pharmaceutical companies. I'm Art Bell. Leah Danks is my guest. We'll be right back.
Talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from outside the U.S. First, dial your access number to the USA. Then, 800-893-0903. If you're a first-time caller, call Art at 702-727-1222. From east of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255 or call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye.
Well, all I can tell you is this song gives me goosebumps. Serious goosebumps every time I hear it. I love this thing. It's Gordon Lightfoot. He's a Canadian, by the way,
I walk away like a movie star who gets burned in a freeway strip.
That line has been rolling around, battering around in my head back and forth now for weeks. Like a movie star burned in a three-way script. Good morning, everybody. Leah Danks is here, and she's giving us hard tips on how to prepare for Y2K. And she'll be right back. All right, back to my guest, Leah Danks. Leah, welcome back. All right, we're still with food here. Your refrigerator idea is superb, if you live in the country.
Right, or if you have a backyard.
Yeah. That's right. And a lot of people, even in the city, do have backyards.
Sure.
But if you live in a high-rise, that...
Well, high-rises are a problem, and I don't have any brilliant solutions to this, unfortunately. I wish I did. The best thing I can say is store a lot of food in small quantities. If you're going to buy canned goods, don't buy the big gallon cans. They're cheaper, but once you open them, you can't store them. So buy smaller packages of everything and eat up what you open.
Mm.
That's the best way I know.
Okay. Do you expect, this is a difficult subject, but a lot of people who are in the cities, if they begin to see a protracted or serious problem, are going to want to get the hell out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that scares me.
Well, there are some scenarios that I don't think anybody wants to go to, you know. It doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure these out.
To imagine the worst.
Right. And actually, the book I wrote was a semi-response to that, because imagine what a widowed lady would do on the 37th floor of a high-rise in Chicago. You know, the windows are sealed. Even if she had a little stove, she couldn't burn it in there unless she broke a window. If they lose the water, if they lose the sewerage, what's she going to do? Is she going to climb down 37 floors and haul food and water up? She's got a serious problem.
All right, and let's talk about another serious problem, and that is for everybody, and that is, supposing you store food and you don't do it well and you get sick, or supposing your food is just fine and you get sick anyway.
Yeah. Well, actually, we had a taste of this, and it can happen to anyone. My husband's a very healthy, large man, and he scratched a sore on his leg last fall, and it got infected with a staph
germ. Yep.
And he was on the strongest antibiotics they have by drip intravenously for a week before that thing even began to go down. Now, if this had been a period of crisis and there was a shortage of antibiotics and people were much sicker and much more desperately injured than he was, they'd have sat him in the corner somewhere and said, "We'll get to you later." And he would have died.
God.
That really shook me up, because I saw how crucial good health is. And so I go into that quite a bit. The health care system is my biggest concern.
Well, here's a headline. It says, Wall Street Journal and NBC indicate that the panic buying of medicine is beginning to scare pharmaceutical industries.
Mm-hmm.
And people are doing that. I mean, my own wife, for example, is asthmatic.
Uh-huh.
She has got to have the inhalers.
Right.
And so people, obviously, you know, there's people who need insulin.
Yes.
And a million other medicines to keep themselves well and balanced.
Right. You know that over 75% of the world's insulin is made at one factory in the Netherlands.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, you know, you can just move that scenario on out. Insulin will store pretty well for about a year, but if you don't have it ahead of time, you're in trouble, and getting doctors to write prescriptions ahead of time is going to be a problem.
Well, suppose you go into your doctor today and you say, and you just level with him, and you say, "Look, I require this to be alive. You know, if I don't have it for an extended period, I'm going to die.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned about Y2K. Please write me a supply."
Mm-hmm.
Why will they won't do it, or what?
Well, I haven't had any personal experience with that, because I don't need any medication. And I honestly don't know. I think it would depend on the individual physician, and I think if he won't do it, you need to shop around.
Okay, but Leah, you just mentioned a staph infection.
Mm-hmm.
There are all kinds of infections that, without
right.
antibiotic care, will kill you dead.
Well, I'm not trying to advocate any particular healing method, but I have recently discovered colloidal silver, and it apparently does destroy over 650 pathogens, and it's harmless to the body.
I tried it.
Did you?
Yeah, I tried it.
Didn't
I'll
work?
Tell you, no, it didn't.
Yeah.
And I, every time I take an airplane flight, you know, I go to the other side of the world somewhere on vacation.
Yeah.
I get sick every time, every single time. And so this one time I thought, boy, somebody sent me colloidal silver, and I started a regimen of taking all different types of it, really well done. And then I even took it with me and inhaled some of it on the airplane, and I got sicker than a dog.
Oh, boy.
So I'm not saying it's not good.
Yeah, I don't think there are any good answers. That's the problem. I wanted to quote to you something from the Senate subcommittee's report that it was just released.
Please.
And they go into all the different areas of concern, and the biggest one is health care. And they say 64% of hospitals have no plans to test their Y2K fixes before the date. 90% of the doctor's offices are simply unaware of how exposed they are to the Y2K problem.
We better slow down. 64% of all hospitals have not tested their equipment?
Right, that's what they say. I'm just quoting from their report.
This is from the Senate?
Yeah.
Okay, and doctors are unaware of all this?
Well, 90% of the doctors simply aren't aware of what the problems are going to be. They say federal payment systems for Medicare and other health insurance programs are behind schedule for repair. And their final statement in this segment says the healthcare industry is one of the worst prepared for Y2K and carries a significant potential for harm.
Leah.
So that's from the government.
That's from the government. All right, Leah. Let's say that we have an infection and we can't get to a doctor or to a pharmacy to get antibiotics.
Right.
What then?
Well, you know what used to happen in Grandpa's day?
What?
You died.
Well,
nobody wants to hear that.
Nobody wants to hear that. I'm asking you, is there any alternative? In other words...
Well, there are, of course, always alternatives. To me, prevention is very important. Be scrupulously careful with sanitation and, in your basic health. Eat really well, take lots of vitamins, build your immune system up, and sterilize everything you get your hands on.
I suppose if you were to go to a doctor and say, look, I'm preparing for Y2K, how about a little penicillin?
Yeah.
Prescription.
There is a doctor on the net that I'm in contact with who's trying to prepare packages of Y2K, basically antibiotics. That's what he's concentrating on.
Right.
And he has been prevented from doing this.
What?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
Yep. I can put you in touch with him.
He's been prevented by...
Well, I don't know exactly who. I don't want to, go on record as saying because I'm not sure about my sources.
In other words, you would want... I'm just going to say what I feel, and I may be out of line, but it seems to me that a broad-spectrum antibiotic would be, as valuable as gold if you needed it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think so.
But the problem
with antibiotics, Art, is they're perishable, and they don't last that long. And so, you can't just stock up today for the next 2 years. That's a problem.
Well, if you were to get a broad-spectrum antibiotic in a capsule form, for example,
mm-hmm.
how long might it be good for?
Usually a year is the longest.
A year?
I would think. But see, it depends on the various antibiotics. They all have slightly different dates. And I'm not an expert on that. Now, he is, and I'll be happy to put you in touch with him.
All right. I'll take you up on that.
Yeah, okay. Because this is important. It's crucial. But the thing is, I don't know if there's enough made if everybody starts buying it,
Yeah, I hear you.
So I can meet the demand. It's the same way with food.
We
sustain a huge population in this country because our highly mechanized food systems can provide it. And otherwise, we couldn't feed the population that we have.
Leah, I'm going to ask you a very provocative question, which you can decline to answer if you wish. You have obviously prepared food, water.
I'm in the process.
Basics. You're in the process.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time something happens, if it does,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not saying Y2K is going to happen, maybe it'll be a big nothing, but let's operate under the assumption that something will happen. And you have food.
Mm-hmm.
And you have water, and you have all the things you need to stay alive. But what happens when people come a knocking on your door?
I knew you were going to ask that.
Well, look, I can't not.
No,
ask
I know.
It. And I don't even have the answer for myself.
It's a big unanswered question in everybody's head.
and this is the biggest fear. One of the things I am suggesting is if there's any way that you can possibly afford it, and God knows beans and rice are cheap, stock up enough for one more family, just in case. Because if somebody comes to your door with hungry kids, what are you going to do?
That's right.
You know, at least you can give them a bag of beans and rice.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what else to say. I'm trying to work with churches and suggest that pastors and their congregations get together not only to support themselves, but to set up soup kitchens.
Well, I won't push you to the limit. I mean, I could ask. Family one comes, you give them something. Two comes, three comes. Mm-hmm. At some point, there's a cutoff.
Yeah, at some point, there's a cutoff.
And
these are decisions that, huge moral decisions, that nobody wants to have to make. And I can't honestly tell you what I do right now.
I can't either. I've thought about it, and, you know, in my more macho, stupid moments, I say, somebody coming across my property line, I'm going to put a bullet through them if I have to.
Right.
We're really getting down to the rank bottom here. But then another part of me says, you know, would I really want to live shooting people for food? You know, so, God, this is so hard.
Well, I know, and I foresee the next few years as being a very interesting period in the sense of, may you live in interesting times, the ancient Chinese curse. But there are going to be some serious polarities within families. There are going to be major moral decisions that people will have to make if this all comes about. And I don't think it's going to be an easy time for anyone. And we have to at least be as well prepared for it psychologically as anything. I have a chapter in my book about change. And, you know, people don't want to change. They don't want to deal with the fact that their world may change. But if you're a little bit prepared for it, you might get through it easier, more easily. But I don't have any sharp answers on that one. I wish I did. In fact, my fears about all of this is what drove me to write the book, just to do something positive. And to have an answer for people who come to me and say, what'll I do? Well, start doing something. You know, whatever you can do, do it. And
so,
try to prepare to help someone else.
Prepare to help someone else. That really does make an awful lot of sense.
Yeah.
What is the proper venue, do you think, for getting people alerted and doing some of the things you want them to do? Churches?
Well, it seems to be a grassroots movement. I have met in my local area with a lot of various business and utility and banking officials, and they're sincere people and they're trying, but they will not and cannot give me the answers I want for many reasons. I mean, there's legal reasons and there's just plain practical reasons.
There's a lot of legal reasons.
Yeah,
I'm sticking my neck way out on this one, and here it is. Leah, are you going to go to the bank and withdraw extra cash before January 1st?
Well, let's just say this. I don't think I'm going to put it in to begin with. But this is a serious problem because, and I'm not a financial expert by any means, but the banks simply have mostly electronic cash anyway. It's not going to be there for you to withdraw. You know, I've heard, and I don't have any proof of this, that for every $100 they have on deposit, only about $2 is actually in the bank.
I've read it, Leah.
It's only electronic blips on a screen.
2%. They
can
cover 2%, and they're out there, of course, printing a lot of money right now.
Right, which I'm wondering how much that's going to devalue everything. I just don't know how they're going to manage that. But the fear is the biggest problem. You know, if everybody runs, and this is what everybody tells me.
Leah, hold on. I'm sorry. I just realized I blew a break, so let me take care of my break very quickly, and we will be right back.
And now, back to the best of Art Bell.
All right, back to banks and back to money. Leah, very quickly, here's my problem. It's that, on the one hand, in the short term, if it's 2 weeks or it's a month, cash is going to be king.
Yep.
You know, people with cash are going to get what they want for some period of time.
Mm-hmm.
If this goes 6 months, then the only currency out there is food and guns.
Mm-hmm. And open pollinated seeds.
Open pollinated seeds?
Mm-hmm. My personal opinion, and it's just an opinion, is that someday they will be worth their weight in gold, because hybrid seeds cannot be saved from season to season and breed true. Open pollinated or heirloom seeds are the old seeds that haven't, you know, been bred into hybrids.
I guess you're not a big fan of the Terminator gene, huh?
Oh,
seed.
Don't even get me started on that. I get really upset about that. But basically, if you don't have a way to feed yourself next year,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, you can take a very small spot of ground and grow an awful lot of food if you know how to do it,
mm-hmm.
and if you have the seeds. And so I really think those are crucial.
How long are they good for?
Well, seeds are not supposed to be stored in an oxygen-free environment, but if you store them in a dry environment and cool, they'll last for some years.
Some years?
It's different for every single seed. Like onion seeds are supposed to only last for a year, but it's been my experience you can store a lot of things longer than they say. You know, you may not get as much germination, but...
You'll get something, and that's better than nothing.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of grains, I mean, wheat and a lot of the grains will store for a long time.
All right. Leah, what we're going to do is take a break here at the top of the hour, and when we come back, what I want to do is open lines and just let everybody out there ask you questions. How's that?
Okay.
All right, Leah Danks is my guest. If you want to know more, there's a link on my website to Leah's. Take a look there. You can also go to Amazon.com through my website by clicking on Leah's name and go get her book. It sounds like it's good sound advice. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
Kingdom of Nye, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. From east of the Rockies, call Art at 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, at 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may fax Art at area code 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
My guest is Leah Danks. We're talking about Y2K. All right. Here we go. Once again, here is Leah Danks. And Leah, we're going to go to the phones and let the average people out there ask you questions that I obviously have not yet asked. How's that?
Fine.
Okay, here they come. First time caller line, you're on the air with Leah Danks. Good morning. Hello.
Hello, Leah.
Turn your radio off, please, sir.
I'm sorry about that. How you doing, Art?
Fine. Where are you?
I'm calling from Chandler, Arizona.
Okay.
And hello, Leah. Hello, Art. Great show today.
Thank you.
I was just inquiring today. I've been I work in the technology field in Phoenix, and I don't know how to get a point across to ask my manager more or less on, you know, on the Y2K problems, but I see it all around me, you know, everything that's coming on, like in your book, The Quickening Art.
Yes.
And I don't know, more or less, if you do it, not like behind closed doors, but how can you get prepared more or less, because I'm in basically Phoenix, Arizona.
You're in the city.
Right. Well, Tempe, Chandler, it's mainly Phoenix.
Phoenix is a sprawling,
exactly.
gigantic place now.
Basically like, you know, L.A. more or less. With the population so big, what do you do? Because, I mean, you know, the year 2000's rolling around right around the corner, Leah.
So what exactly are you asking me? Please clarify that.
Yep. I'm asking you more or less, like, as far as, you know, the population outbursts. I mean, there's supermarkets up here, and you really can't tell from, like, a global standpoint if you just go out and, you know, you don't notice it. Like
You're really confusing me, sir. Do you have... First-time callers, call area 702-727-1222.
In the city, right?
Yeah, he's worried about being in the city.
Well...
And he's got, obviously, lower intestinal difficulties on top of that.
Oh, okay.
But he is, yeah, he's worried. A lot of people are worried about being in the city.
Yeah, and obviously everybody can't vacate the cities, and the best thing to do is find a group of people, either your church group or a social group of some kind, that you can work with and feel supported by. That would be my best suggestion.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Leah Dax. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
This is Chris from Northridge, California.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. I was at the epicenter of the 94 Northridge earthquake,
mm-hmm.
and we had catastrophic problems here. And what happened here is I'm in a wheelchair, and we had a lot of problems as far as mobility, and we left the city and had to get...
You left Northridge?
Yeah, we drove out of here. I drove by a car on fire with a person in it where water was shooting out, and it was just mayhem. And as far as, sharing our supply, we came back and forth, my wife, from Santa Barbara back to L.A. After the earthquake, and shared our supplies with different people in our immediate area and brought groceries to our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
But, there wasn't the anarchy, and we had a lot of really wonderful people that came together in our neighborhood.
There was, though, a basic difference. In other words, Northridge, as awful as it was pretty much, A, confined to the Northridge area, B, communications came back up pretty quickly, and you found out that, gee, we have trouble here in Northridge, but everywhere else seems to be okay, and help began to pour in.
Help was really slow in coming, believe it or not.
I believe you.
There was a run on food that was in 4 or 5 hours. There was nothing on the shelves, and it was. But my main point is, when the Y2K rolls around, those of you that have friends and acquaintances that are disabled are wheelchair bound will not be able to use elevators. That was
point.
The case here for quite some time. And making sure that loved ones that are in a an apartment situation, they're going to be stuck there.
It's a very good point. Leah, what about people like that man, disabled? He points out some very important things. If
yeah.
you're in a wheelchair and the power goes, you're not going to the elevator. You're not going downstairs.
Right.
Not without help.
I think the only thing that someone like that could do is to make some contingency plans well ahead. If there's any way that you can be in a safer environment during the peak of these problems, I would suggest trying to do that. There's no easy answers to this, but if you have family or friends that you can depend on to help you, I'd set up those plans now.
Well, I'll tell you, Leah, there was a time in America when families lived together, generations
right.
lived together. Those days are long gone.
I know.
My parents are on the East Coast.
Yep.
They're on the East Coast.
I know.
And that's not an unusual situation. We're separated many times by thousands of miles. And worse yet, most of us don't know our neighbors.
I know. This is something that we're going to come to grips with. Either we're going to all separate into little bastions of defensive, gun-wielding groups, or we're going to have to work together. And I think we need to address this as soon as possible, because after the fact, it's a little late.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons I'm trying to promote my book and this information, not to scare people, but to let them get prepared
mm-hmm.
and to help people think about things they might not have thought about.
Do you cover the subject of weapons in your?
Actually, I chickened out on that one.
Did you? I don't blame you. I really don't blame you.
Yeah, I cover personal safety for people who want to, do the nonviolent attitude aspect. But I did not go into weapons because I figured that people who are going to do weapons already know pretty much about them.
That's true.
And people who don't have any business fooling with them.
Yeah, ought not be. I saw some coverage on CNN of apparently the Red Cross was all set to get involved in this preparedness thing.
Yeah.
And then they found a webpage that had links to groups that were talking about guns, and the Red Cross just pulled right out, wouldn't have anything to do with it.
Hmm.
And, it's because they say that's not what they're all about.
Right.
But Leah, is that if this goes very long, is that what it's going to be all about?
Well, this is a complex and vast question, and I think there will be a million stories. You know, I think there will be a million experiences when people have to decide how they're going to act in an emergency. People who are comfortable and well-fed tend to be less dangerous than those who aren't.
And people who are normally not violent,
yeah,
if they're faced with becoming violent to feed their children,
yeah,
I think you and I both know that a good, yeah, majority of them would do so, and nobody in the world would blame them.
Right. And I'm not sure, you know, that these are people who are going to be angry at themselves anyway at some deep level for not having prepared. And now they're looking at their kids in need, and they're going to go out and take that out on people. And I don't know what you do about that.
I don't either. People keep writing to me and saying, oh, Art, what a fool you're going to look to be when nothing happens. I hope so, too. I have no problem with that.
Me either. I'll dance on the table at the I Was Wrong party.
There you are. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Leah Danks. Hi.
Hello. My name is Robin.
Robin,
hello. I live in Rhode Island.
Rhode Island, huh?
Yes, so that moral issue, I have a comment and a question.
All right, go ahead.
This is wonderful, Leah. I'm a single mother living with two young daughters, and I live in the country in a single home. And the moral question I've already thought of what I do if someone came to my house and it was between my two girls and them. I think I would choose my two daughters. The other issue is...
I've got a better question for you, dear.
What's that?
Let's see if you can answer this one. Suppose you, as a single mother, are not prepared, and you have to feed your children. What would you do to feed your children?
Right, I probably would go out looking for food for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm preparing now. And my question is, most people I talk with, pastors, neighbors, friends, family, they poo-poo the subject, and it's difficult to speak with them,
yes,
about it.
Yes.
And I would like to get the word out there to speak with them. So I'm making tapes of Gary North and Leah's. I'm going to make tapes of Leah's show and Ed Jordan's and pass them out. And the question I have is, I have a well in the backyard, and if there's not electricity, how do I get the well to work? Is there a hand pump?
How deep is the well?
How deep?
Do you know how deep the well is?
I think it's 150 feet.
Oh.
And do I get a generator? And what do the gas runs out?
Hold on. We're going to try and answer that. Her well is 150 feet deep, Leah.
That's a little deep for hand pumping. Is it a small well? It's not an old dug well, is it? It's a little narrow well.
It's probably, Leah, like mine. I've got a well out back. It's down about 160 feet, I think.
Yeah. I would talk to somebody who's an expert on wells, and you should be easily able to find one if you live in a rural area, and see what they say. But you possibly could do that. You can also pump water into a large holding tank, you know, 500 to 1,000 gallons. We've done that, and it works fine.
My plan was, I've got an 11.5-kilowatt generator. I'm fortunate, mm-hmm, that runs on propane. And so my thought was, well, supply 220 volts
mm-hmm,
to the pump, let it, mm-hmm, pump into the pressure tank.
Right.
And then I've got 40 gallons sitting there ready for use, and I can turn the generator off.
Yeah, now you've got a good setup. That brings up something I wanted to... I would like to make two comments to Robin. One, I was speaking recently at a local group, and I asked... It was a fairly large group, and I asked them, who among you has family or friends that thinks you're crazy for preparing for the year 2000? And every single hand in the room went up.
Yeah.
And so don't get discouraged by this, because I think that what you have to say is important, and I think the more that we talk about it and get the word out, if we do it in a non-aggressive and a non-radical way,
mm-hmm,
it's basic common sense. And I think it will, you know, it will start the dialogue going. We've got to start that kind of discussion of these hard subjects.
Do you think that the regular American media, I'm talking now about the networks, even CNN, as the year moves on, will ease people into instructions with regard to preparation, or are they going to keep their respective heads buried in the let's don't panic anybody sand right up until the last moment?
Well, I hope not. I have not seen, they're always trying to be, quote, responsible and show both sides. You know, they talk, whenever, as you know, whenever they talk about space aliens, they bring in the scientists to poo-poo it.
I know.
And so I think they're probably going to continue to do this and play neutral. And I think this is a very dangerous thing. But then nobody wants to be responsible for setting off a financial panic.
That's right.
Or a social panic.
I don't. And you walk such a fine line. On the one hand, the way I say it is, I'm telling my friends and my relatives to have some extra cash on hand.
Yeah.
Now, that's a fine line, Leah, because when you say it on the air to millions of people...
Yeah, right.
As you pointed out, they've got about 2% reserves. So I don't, you know, I'm scared to death of this, and I'm scared that even if Y2K doesn't happen...
Yeah, it could destroy it anyway.
The financial mess that would result from even a fairly healthy portion of people going to the bank to take out money would ruin us. Now, CNN's running surveys that say about 46%, I believe, of the American people plan to take extra money out of the bank for Y2K. Mm-hmm. If that happens, trail off sentence.
Yeah. Well, I've got a sentence in my book about, and this was last year, even way back then, 37 or 38% of the financial planners interviewed were planning to remove their investments. And somebody said that's like watching the pilot of your plane heading for the door with a parachute.
It's did you say 38%?
That's what I think, yeah. A huge amount.
All right, well, I'll just let that sink in out there.
Yeah.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Leah Danks. Hi.
Yes, I'm in Vancouver, Washington.
Okay, you're going to have to speak up right into the phone, sir. Vancouver, Washington.
Yes, and I would like to comment on the necessity of community. And then my question is, you've both said that seeds will be worth their weight in gold. What do you believe gold will be worth?
Oh, well, actually, that's a very good question. Now, the price of gold, strangely, is still exceptionally low. Gold, I suppose, after cash became not so meaningful, Leah, gold would be quite meaningful, wouldn't it?
Well, are you asking me?
Yeah, I am.
I'm not a financial expert, so don't take my word for it, but, you know, gold usually goes opposite the stock market, and it's up, the gold is down. So right now it's reasonably priced, but I think if we do have financial difficulties, to put it mildly, that of course gold will increase in value.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's always carried the value of money through hard times.
Ever since there has been gold, man has. All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Leah Danks. Where are you, please?
I'm in Westlake.
I can't hear you, sir.
I'm in Westlake.
Westlake, California?
Louisiana.
Louisiana. All right. Do you have a question?
Yes.
Go ahead.
About the Y2K?
Yes.
Hold on. Let me turn off that. Okay. My question is, do you know about they're saying the two digits are set on the date?
Yes.
00? Did they also explain that also on the computers that their BIOS chip is set to the year 2099 of the 31st day?
Yeah, you're talking about thank you very much. You're talking about a technical aspect of Y2K that I don't think Leah is specifically prepared to answer.
I didn't understand what he was asking. Maybe I could if I knew.
He was talking about computer BIOS, and that's a pretty technical question that a programmer would answer, but he's absolutely correct. A lot of people who think that there is no problem with their computer have not even begun to consider an area of their computer that they don't deal with, and that's the BIOS. And it's kind of technical stuff, Leah, but... Suffice to say that what it really means is that a lot of people who have computers who think they're clean without a problem are going to get a very sad surprise.
Well, the computer chip problem, the embedded chip problem, concerns me more than anything.
Me too. Leah, stay right there. We'll be right back. Leah Danks is here, and she's giving practical advice to people who are concerned about Y2K and want to prepare for it, want to do at least the basics. Nobody's going wild. Nobody's going out buying fatigues and boots and all the rest of it. But if you want to do a few basic things to get ready, then Leah Danks is the guest for you. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. This
is Coast to Coast AM.
Talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. To reach Art from outside the U.S., first dial your access number to the USA, then 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
Let me tell you what I think, all right? I think you should be very thankful for people like Leah Danks, Gary North, Ed Yordan, Dr. Yardini, the Senate people that have been speaking up. Whether or not something happens, if it doesn't happen, then all of us can stand the catcalls, I'm sure. I certainly can. If it does, then I guess I'm just thankful that we were able to reach the people that we were able to reach, because they'll reach out and help others, hopefully. So I think people like Leah Danks and others who are speaking out on this issue are courageous and don't deserve catcalls because it might not happen. But people will be as people will be, I suppose. And you know something? The people that you've got to really watch out for the most are probably the scoffers, the ones who now get angry when they hear this, or they think people are just trying to rip them in some way when they're talking about preparation. Those are going to be the most dangerous people out there if it really happens. Otherwise, they'll just be the I told you so types, which, as I said, no problem. I can absorb that, because I know it might not happen. All I can tell you is that with the investigation I've done privately, not based on what Gary North said, but based on the fact that he said it, I set out and did my own little investigation, my personal investigation, as best I could. And the answer I came up with is that something is going to happen. That's my personal answer. I'm not preaching to you. I'm just telling you what I found out. And I would invite you to do your own investigation. It's the best thing you can do. Go to your bank. Ask your bank. Kind of get somebody at the bank off on the side and ask them. Go to your power company and ask them. Go to your gas company and ask them. Do your own little investigation. Talk to people who probably know what they're talking about in these areas. Telecommunications. Now, there's one we haven't even covered yet. So Leah Danks will be right back. Stay right where you are. By the way, we're going to tell you how to get her book in a moment. Let me tell you about something that I probably ought not tell you. I'm not going to give you specifics, all right? I have talked to a power company, not necessarily mine. And most power companies, rural cooperatives and power companies that serve local areas, are making behind-the-scenes preparations to provide what service they can, disconnected from the grid. Do you understand what I'm saying? In other words, if the grid fails, they obviously have a local responsibility to continue to supply power. They cannot talk about this and will not talk about this for legal reasons. In other words, they are committed to service the grid. But if the grid fails, you can bet just about every last dollar you have that communities are going to do what they can to get their own service back up. And a lot of them are going to do it, but they're not going to be part of the grid. What I'm telling you is what they can't tell you. Leah, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, I've talked at length with our local utilities, and we asked them if they could separate from the grid, and they said, oh, yeah. They're set up to supply us electricity from a coal-fired plant.
That's right.
And we asked them, how long do you have coal stored for? And they said, oh, 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, well, what if it goes beyond 30 days? And they just kind of went blank. They said, well, we'll ship some more in via the railways. And somebody said, well, what if the railways aren't functioning? You know, they've taken out the electrics, you know, the hand switches.
Yes.
And the guys just didn't have an answer.
I know.
Now, I have another scenario. If they have to take down the nuclear plant, and that's a decision they'll have to make in July because it takes about 6 months to shut them down.
You know, of course, that there was a false certification of compliance.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody actually, can you imagine that? They falsified compliance
statements.
Well, most
of our government agencies are self-regulated.
Good God.
I know. I'm nervous about a lot of this for these reasons. You can start investigating, and the more you find out, the more nervous you get. But here's another scenario I'm wondering about, and I don't have a good answer. If they have to take down 20% of our electric supplies in July, and most of the nuclear plants provide the large east and west coast cities.
That's right.
Then they're going to have to get that electricity from somewhere. Now, I'm in a little rural electric area. We don't count if you put us up against New York City or Washington, D.C. or Los Angeles.
Right.
I can see the government having to nationalize the electric grid in order to have a fair distribution because they can't afford for us to pull out and for New York City to go dark. They're going to have to force the electric utilities, I would think.
Leah, that would pit local areas against some sort of central authority.
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. They may have to impose
that
in order to force them to supply electricity. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a logical outcome. I don't know the answer to that.
Nor do I. I just know
that somebody could, you know,
it really is a problem, and it's one that they won't talk about. That's why I wanted to talk about it tonight, because I know plans are being made behind the scenes. They just won't talk about it.
I hope somebody has some information on this, because that's a major concern to me. You take out 20% of the country's most critical electrical systems, and how do you make it up?
I don't know. First time caller line, you're on the air with Leah Danks. Hi.
Hi. This is Tina from Fairbanks, Alaska.
Fairbanks, Alaska.
Yeah.
Oh, Tina.
We've been hearing lately that Alaska is pretty much done with their stuff, and they're supposed to start their testing in June. But anyway, a few of my comments was my husband found this Y2K in November of 97, right after my sister bought me a brand new Gateway 2000 for Christmas. Once we found that, we started doing a little more looking, and I turned around and sold my Gateway for close to the price I paid for it, and we started getting prepared back then. And so a comment on that medical alternatives.
Yes.
If people, some people like we've gotten a few herbal medical remedy type books. And plantain is a very good infection fighter for topical.
There are such remedies, and that's a good idea.
Yeah, I do advocate in my book that everyone have alternative references.
Right.
And become skillful in using tinctures and herbal preparations.
Yeah.
They've worked for centuries. They're just not terribly effective at a quick pace for violent infections. So,
right.
You know, it just depends on the nature of the problem.
Tina, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
What is a typical average temperature in January in Fairbanks?
Well, about a couple weeks ago, we got down to about 40, 45 degrees in town.
Below zero?
Below zero.
Below zero. 45 degrees below zero.
Yeah.
If the power didn't work there, Tina, what would happen?
Well, up here in Fairbanks, a lot of the heat is water boiler, And most all of the in-town apartment buildings are supplied with water heating boiler systems, radiators.
What runs the boilers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the fuel?
Electricity, I think, or coal, one of the two.
Electricity or coal?
Yeah. I'm up here, we just had, you know, a little outage with our electrical stove for 2 days. And we've got a family of seven, and four of them are kids that we have to feed. And I always cook from scratch. I don't even buy any of the prepackaged stuff. And I couldn't cook a meal, a hot meal, for my kids because didn't have the electric stove working.
You know, one of the things I'm advocating, and I really hope people will do this, is to practice ahead of time making nutritious one-pot meals and getting a little stove. There's several neat little stoves that you can get that you can prepare food on very, very inexpensively.
That was going to be my question.
Little Coleman stoves?
Actually, these are even more unique. There's one called the Sierra that will burn absolutely anything you put in it. You know, chips, charcoal, pine cones, anything.
How? It's called the Sierra?
The Sierra.
Mm-hmm. And chips or pine cones?
Yeah, wood chips, anything. And there's another one called the Volcano, and it's a fascinating little thing. And they say you can cook two meals a day for two people for 2 months on one bag of charcoal.
Good Lord.
It's a fascinating little thing. I found some really interesting stuff that I've listed in my book that gives you more options than most people realize.
All right. It is time to ask you about your book. Obviously, the computer folks can go to Amazon.com and get it there. Is your book in bookstores?
Actually, no. It's privately published, and it wasn't even intended to be a hard copy at first. I was going to just put it up on the net and, you know, relax. And that didn't work very well. It, you know, went to a lot of demand, so I'm publishing it myself.
All right.
If
people want, yeah. Do you have a phone number?
Yes, I have an 88 number. It's 888-240-9074.
That's 1-888-240-9074. Now, is that a 24-hour number?
Yes, it is. It's an answering service that will take an order or give you information or leave me a message. And you can also order it through my website.
Okay, we're linked to that.
Yeah.
No problem there, but I think it's important we get this phone number out. Your book, so that everybody knows, is specific advice to getting through the year Y2000 crisis, or any other crisis that might come along.
It's the only one I know right now of that is specifically geared to the Y2K. And there are some really good books out there about emergency survival, but a lot of them advise that you buy a lot of equipment that you may never need and that could really deplete your finances, because the Y2K, we know when it's going to happen. And long-term preparation for possible disasters, like weather disasters and so forth, is a little bit different. And so we have some specific parameters here that we're working with, and so this gives you specifically a 40-page checklist in the back.
A 40-page checklist.
Yeah. And it's everything, and it's keyed to each chapter, and as you read each chapter, you just check off in the checklist what you need, what you want, write down where you can get it, the catalog you may have to go to get it in. In the whole thing. So it's a step-by-step workbook that if you have it, that's all you have to do. You just go through it, fill out the checklist, and do it.
All right. For everybody who ran to get a pen, here is the number again. The book is Building Your Ark, Your Personal Survival Guide to the Year 2000 Crisis. But this would be a good book to have on the shelf, it seems to me, whether or not Y2K occurs.
Yeah, I tried to put in a lot of just helpful information.
The number is 1-888-240-9074, correct?
Yes.
All right, fine. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Leah Dax. Hi. Hello there.
Oh, hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Leah, I'm enjoying your talk and
all the
information you have. I was going to mention that there's these programs at most of the churches that they have wildlife survival, and it's called a Royal Ranger Group. They have them in 48 states. Have you heard of them?
I would love to know more about it. Perhaps you could
My husband
can tell you how to get in touch with me or however you do that.
Okay.
I have an update page that I could put that information out on.
Okay, because they teach them, they take them to the mountains without anything. They know how to build fires with just wood, just, you know, and twigs. And they teach them what plants are edible, and even in your garden you have weeds. I mean, not weeds, they're like watercress and different things that grow that you can eat.
Yeah, and you better learn, because if you go out there, for example, where I live here in the desert, and you pick the wrong thing and eat it, it'll kill you. So,
well, see, you might get to a point where kids will be so hungry they'll want to pick up things like that.
Yeah, they'll pick up and eat anything, and they'll drink anything.
That's right. So this is a real good training for those young boys.
All right. Do you have a specific question, ma'am?
Well, I was going to ask her, now, do you think that the Edison, well, here I'm talking about a certain...
That's all right. Edison's a big one. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, can't they rotate if they're going to only be able to run, say, a month or so? Can't they just maybe run it?
Where are you located?
I'm in California, central located.
All right. Actually, it's a very good question, Leah. Do you think it could get to the point where there would be rotating outages? In other words, to supply...
Yeah, I do. In fact, I think that's the most likely scenario. It just makes sense. They're going to have brownouts here and there, and lowered supplies to be able to supply the whole grid if parts of it go down. I mean, there's no other way that I can see it'll function.
What about communication, Leah?
Well, that all depends on our electric supply. Everything does.
Mm-hmm.
We can only have communications aside from ham radio, you know, if we have electricity.
I think that communications, if power goes off, is going to be absolutely critical. Now, a lot of radio stations have generators.
Mm-hmm.
That's helpful.
I do foresee them nationalizing or rationing gasoline simply because the 911 services, the fire departments, and the hospitals who have generators, and the communications who have to use gasoline-powered generators, they have to have the gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a suggestion for people. Almost invariably when I speak with people, they say, oh, I'll get a bucket of wheat and a generator and I'm fine. And my suggestion is backing down to a generator, unless they're in a condition where you are like they have a propane generator and they have a big tank and
that's
you know,
right.
all of that.
Right.
Just getting a generator
not enough.
Is a half step down instead of a whole step. They're still relying on a technology that will possibly run out of gas and oil.
That's right.
And generators are notorious for going out. And a really interesting story from Omaha two years ago when they had a very serious winter storm, a lot of people were taken to the hospital with carbon monoxide poisoning, and when they found out what it was, people had been running their generators in the garage, and it had been seeping into the house, the fumes, because if they put the generators outside, they got stolen. And so...
That's a very important fact, isn't it, that social behavior is...
Mm-hmm. So that the generators weren't the answer in that condition, in that situation, unless you're willing and able and prepared to live as Grandma did for a while, and you can do so quite comfortably, then you still may have a lot of problems.
Boy, I'll tell you, Leah, I sure as hell hope this doesn't happen, because socially, Grandma would have made it. I'm not so sure that today's MTV generation...
Yeah, I know. They were weaned on a computer mouse.
That's right.
And it's going to be a shock for a lot of people. That's why I'm doing the best I can to get as much educational information out there.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Leah Danks. Not a lot of time here for the top of the hour.
I know. I'll be fast. Listen, I live in a mobile home, Mark. Okay?
Okay.
And my way of getting through to my neighbors, finally, it took me 5 months to prepare, so I am as prepared for Y2K as probably any of the 300 people I live here with.
Yes.
And I'm not kidding, Art, because I had to bring bottles of water over to them and explain what they were supposed to use these for.
Right.
That it took 1 gallon to flush your toilet if the water was shut off.
Right.
And it does work. Safe candles. I have a infrared vent free space heater that I called up my propane company and I asked them, what do you have for me that's safe? A friend of mine up the street has a wood-burning stove. You can put them in safely in mobile homes. They do work.
Mm-hmm.
I specialize in herbs so I can I've been curing myself of illnesses in my family for the last 11 years.
Do you have a question, Kathy?
I just want to know one thing. Why do people continuously tell people to get great big vats of rice when you can get rice that you can cook for your whole family in a dinner, low salt, in boxes that'll keep for 3 years in 10 minutes? When you don't have a lot of space and you don't have a lot of time and a lot of gas, you've got to cook things fast.
Okay.
Okay? So this,
well,
this
there are some great mixes out there.
And that they're on. They're low salt and they're okay for grandma.
And those are going to definitely be the answer for a lot of people if they'll stock them. You know, there are other people like me who like to play with their food, and I enjoy putting up food and drying food and, you know, all that whole process. So I have the time and I have the luxury of doing that. But people who don't, yeah, mixes work. Sure. They're not as high nutrition as some of the more, you know, organically grown products. But in a pinch, yeah, they'll keep you alive. Sure.
How comfortable are you, Leah, hard bottom line, that people will become their brother's keeper if this occurs?
Well, I look back at history, and it's not a real comfortable sight. There have been occasions, you know, when people really helped out in disasters, and I think they'd probably be more prone to now than in times past, but it's hard to say. I mean, it depends on an individual's upbringing and culture and religion as to what they will do in stress.
Couldn't agree more. Leah, you good for one more hour?
You bet.
Stay right where you are. Leah Danks is my guest. Her book is available at 1-888-240-9074. If you want a copy of this program, it's 1-800-917-4278. We'll be right back.
Talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from outside the U.S. First, dial your access number to the USA. Then, 800-893-0903. If you're a first-time caller, call Art at 702-727-1222. From east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call it at 1-800-618-8255.
We've been traveling far, without a home, not without a star. Free, only want to be free.
Good morning, everybody.
We huddle close.
Leah Danks is here.
Hang on.
And this, of course, is Neil Diamond.
On the boats and on the planes, they're coming to America, never looking back again. They're coming to America.
And I'll tell you something. If you were in one of those countries that he's singing about right now, you had a chance to come to America, you'd be here and you wouldn't look back. There's only one way you can know that's right, and that's to travel. I plan on it before the first of the year. God, I love this song. It is.
It'd
be interesting to see if we can hold on to it, huh? Now, here's an interesting note from Sean and Richard in St. Petersburg, Florida. Art, now that we see your streaming video, my co-worker and myself cannot help but wonder if you've planted your tobacco crop yet. As Y2K looms ever so close. From the looks of it, that must be your top priority. Sean and Richard, you're absolutely correct. Have I planted my... No, tobacco does not really grow well in the desert. I will lay in a supply, and then after my supply is gone, I will simply go mad. I will go mad. I will go out and pillage until I find cigarettes. You know, while in one way I'm joking, in another way I'm not. Smokers, you know what I mean. Leah, welcome back.
Yes.
Here's a fact, and, you know, I probably shouldn't read this, but I'm going to read it anyway, because it says a lot, and because I guess I'm getting to the point in my career where I don't give a damn anymore. But here it is. It says, Art Bell, here's my input on the Y2K situation. You have stored food, and I don't. My kids are hungry. I must warn you, don't sleep. Catch my drift. Signed, Anonymous.
You want me to comment on that, right?
Not necessarily.
Yeah, there's no comment necessary.
I probably wouldn't even comment on the thing myself. I don't know what to say, except in such a situation, if it was required, I wouldn't sleep. Get my drift there, Anonymous? In other words, there's more than one person here. And they're well qualified. Long ago, my wife and I got concealed weapon permits, and you have to go through a course, a very rigorous course. Get my drift, Anonymous? So nobody, God help us, Leah, if it comes to that. Just that's all I'll say is God help us.
Well, I think the only real answer that we have to something like that is to talk about it ahead of time, to organize,
to do what we're doing
neighborhood
now.
Groups.
To me, the irresponsible thing is to not talk about it now.
Yeah.
You know, to sort of just let everybody sleep along until mid-year or three-quarters of the way through the year when the real... There's going to be... Here's another thing I want to cover with you, Leah. There are a lot of people who want to talk to you. We'll get to the phones, right back to the phones. But there's going to be a sort of moment that's going to come along where the public is going to suddenly become aware, despite the best efforts of the media not to make them so, that there may be a problem. And I'm not sure when that moment is going to be exactly. Maybe something will key it, some major failure will key it, or just as it gets closer, there'll be a magic point. I'm not sure when that is. But that'll be a serious point when a lot of things are not going to be available because they're all bought up.
Yeah. There's already shortages.
Do you have any thoughts on when that probably...
Well, yeah, if I were to guess, if it doesn't happen the 1st of April, as we mentioned earlier, the rest of the states, 46 of the 50 states' computers roll over to their fiscal years in July. And then in August, of course, we have the global positioning satellite problem. So I think by the end of summer we're going to have some serious public awareness.
All right. Wildcard line, you're on here with Leah and Art. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Guy in Minneapolis.
Hi, Guy.
I'm a communications engineer, and I've got a real quick story about how things could go wrong and then a kind of a question I'd like to ask.
Okay.
You just had a frame relay T1 line put in there for your video feed that you're using right now?
Yes.
And by the way, I like the South Park t-shirt.
Thank you.
But all of our phone calls on all of our telephone and all of our data communications now goes over, you know, digital phone connections and fiber optic connections. And the faster those connections get, the more reliable or the more reliant they are on really accurate clocks, like atomic clocks. And the phone companies don't like to buy atomic clocks because they're real expensive.
Right.
But it turns out we have 24 of them in orbit.
Well, yes, it does. We do, but there also there are some Y2K issues with those orbiting atomic clocks.
That's the problem, is all of the communications infrastructure in this country is based off of, you know, is based off of this timing. And if the timing starts going away in 24
right,
hours, you don't have a long-distance network. You don't have a phone system that works anymore.
I know.
Okay. My question is I live pretty close to an urban, you know, I live to close to a large city. And if things do go wrong, I want to get out of here. But the question is where do you go to? I mean, have you thought of where you would where you would go to where you could live off the land, but it's inhospitable enough that no one else would want to go there?
I live there now. frankly, but it's a good question for almost everybody. In other words, if you get out of a city, then where the hell are you going to go? Most people in rural areas are...
They're not going to invite you in.
No, and they're well-armed. I mean, most people in rural areas are well-armed. So they're going to protect, ultimately, what they have to. They're going to share. If they're decent human beings, they're going to share until they're threatened. And then they're going to protect themselves like any human being is going to do. So I don't have an answer for you. You know, you're asking the same question that I've been skirting around all night. I don't have an answer for it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I think our only safety is in numbers,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that if you can band together with others of like mind, either along, you know, social, cultural, religious lines, and you can support one another and, you know, contribute your various skills to the group, there's people are ingenious, and there's a lot of talent in the world, and I think groups can do more for themselves and for others than isolated persons here and there. And if we could sort of coagulate into various groups that could assist one another with tools and equipment and skills, I think it's going to be a regionalization to some extent.
Bob in Chicago writes in a fax, what about getting gasoline from the electric pumps at gas stations? What are the alternatives?
Have a really good set of lungs and suck it up. I don't know. I don't have an easy solution to that. I'm sure there are some kind of siphons that you can use to suck them out of the underground tanks, but I don't know how much you could get out that way or how fast. They've taken the manual handles out on a lot of the new ones. A lot of the new pumps are just basically computers sitting there. And the old-fashioned pumps you used to could open them up and put a handle in and crank the gas out.
Mm-hmm.
And so there may be a lot of gas in the tanks, and it may just not be available.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Leah and Art. Hello.
Hello.
Hello
Art,
there.
I wanted to say I love the phasing on some of your music.
Oh, thank you. I do, too.
Kevin.
I'm a nut for it.
My name's Kevin in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Yeah. And we have a lot of Amish around here, thousands of them who live without electricity all the time by choice, but I am not one of them. Leah, what do you recommend for... I have an oil furnace. What am I going to do if the power is off for heat?
Well,
what's
you will
safe
be...
and economical for me to
yeah.
buy? To
That's really, really, really a good question.
Yeah.
It's January. It's cold. It's
yeah.
rural Pennsylvania. He's not Amish. Heat.
Right.
Heat.
Well, my first chapter in the book is about staying warm and how to stay warm in a cold house, number one. The Japanese for centuries never heated space. They heated the people. And there's some really clever things that you can do, and you don't have to run a house at 70 degrees when it's 20 outside. You may have to adapt to that. But the other thing, practically speaking, is you may have to find some kind of stove that you can use to heat. And a lot of people close off a lot of their living space and just heat a small area for a temporary time. And you can do that with a fairly small stove, either a propane or a wood or a gas stove. But you have to store enough fuel. It's going to take a lot of fuel. Wood stove is ideal if you have a supply of wood.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd go talk to my Amish friends and see if they could give you some practical advice.
Somebody else advises a good source of water, at least in the immediate, and that is your hot water heater. In other words,
that's about 40 gallons that you can drain.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And so once a failure occurs, you've got to go to an immediate saving mode, and that means that you've got 40 or 50 gallons, whatever you've got, in a water heater, and that's quite a bit of water.
Oh, yeah, you can last quite a while on that. That's 2 gallons a day per person.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you don't even have to use 2 gallons a day per person if you don't do any washing or bathing.
Now, there's a lot of people who think, for example, I have propane here that I cook with,
uh-huh.
but the little starter is electric.
Uh-huh.
I have propane that I heat my home with,
uh-huh.
but it doesn't work without electricity.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people don't think about that. They think, oh, gee, I've got gas.
Uh-huh.
Well, your gas heater isn't going to work real well if there is no electricity.
Right.
It's just going to stop.
Well, basically, what I suggest is you have to think manual. And you have to go through your whole house and your environment and say,
mm-hmm.
what can I do to get myself the same effects manually? And whatever it takes, you have to do that.
And the best way to figure that out is to go turn off your power for
yeah.
a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And figure out what you can do.
I said a few hours. You said a weekend. You're right.
Yeah.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Leah and Art. Hello.
Yes, this is Rob from Phoenix.
Hi, Rob.
I'm actually a systems engineer. I design telephone equipment and software. And one of the things which we work with is the fact that we're fairly certain that there are going to be interruptions in service. One question I have is I have relatives on the other coast or Midwest, and trying to figure out a reliable means of communication other than the telephone systems, simply because there's going to be a lot of interruptions in that and a lot of incompletion of calls.
Well, ham radio. Ham radio, even CB, but mostly ham radio, shortwave, will be a long-distance communication link.
So how long does that take for certification on that?
Well, ham radio requires a license. But if there were a full-blown emergency, to hell with a license, you know. I mean, if you happen to have the equipment, you just use it. And I'm dispensing advice I ought not be dispensing here, but it's the obvious.
All right.
I mean, if you're in a threatening situation and you have equipment that will communicate over a long distance, you use it. But I would advise everybody to begin now. I mean, you begin now, and in a month you can be licensed. It's a good reason to have a ham license, believe me. And then the hams have a responsibility to their community, and that is to provide communication, should it fail, about what's going on elsewhere. There's going to be a master plan, and that plan is going to have to be disseminated in some way. If telecommunications fail, believe me, hams are going to be in high demand.
You know, I do think, Art, one of the main problems most of us will face being in the communication generation is the isolation, the sense that we don't know what's going on.
That's correct.
That's going to be a major problem for a lot of people.
That's correct, and I pray that radio stations around the country right now are at least gearing up to be able to broadcast at some level to their local communities, because they're going to be a link that will keep people from doing things they ought not do.
Right. We have to have, we're so used to turning on the TV for all the news we need or the radio.
I know.
We can't imagine what it'd be like not to have it in that isolation.
I'd also like to verify what the last caller had said, or the last engineer who had called in and said about the timing slippage. That will also occur. You know, that is all currently handled off of chips, typically within the switching equipment or even software, and each T1 line. Or each communications line
mm-hmm.
has to have that timing present. Otherwise, there's a slippage and the signal just completely dissipates. And it's not
Rob, is your name Rob Allen?
Yes.
Okay, I have your email that you sent to me yesterday, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm going to put it on my update page. It was a good analysis of the problems in the communications.
Yeah, there's the problem with the communications industry isn't so much just like a total failure, like a power outage. I mean, there are backup systems and electrical and so forth. The problem is that there's so many small components that will have small failures.
Yes.
That compounds and compounds and compounds until you get a large failure. I don't know if you've ever been in an area where, like in the Midwest, where you'll have power outages or you'll have weather emergencies, and you'll get a lot of times even all circuits are busy on those phone systems.
Boy, I'm getting that a lot lately, actually.
Yeah, if you multiply that times how many ever that you're going to be looking at with larger failures, you can start to see where the problem comes in.
You're a telecommunications engineer, is that correct?
Right, I actually designed some of the
software. What nationwide? What do you really expect?
At least 15 to 35% failure.
Oh my God! 15 to 35% failure. Yeah,
right. Now that doesn't sound like a whole lot until you start looking.
Oh yes, it does. Oh, yes, it does. Because Leah, earlier in the program, I'm remembering something she said. She said complex systems rely on about, where do you say, Leah?
9%.
1% failure?
Yeah, the fault tolerance in a very complex system is only about 1%. I mean, you know, obviously it can't continue to run with millions of parts and such if it has many of those parts down.
Appreciate your call, sir.
No, no problem.
Thank you. And apparently he sent you information that you
yes.
are going to post on your site, Leah?
Yes, I will post parts of it, at least a summary of it, on my update site.
All right. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Leah Danks and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, Art. How you doing? This is Joe. I'm calling from the Pacific Northwest, and I wanted to let you know that your feelings about the Y2K are right on. I'm in the security business, and I'm in the business of transporting securities by armored car.
Oh,
and,
yes. Interesting.
Yeah, and we have been contacted, and I don't want to give out my organization's name, but by several of the larger institutions reference extra deliveries for this problem that you're talking about.
You mean for cash?
Right. They have contacted us. One of the organizations was the Federal Reserve, which is trying to establish if we can bring on additional trucks, how many times a week. They're quite concerned that they're not going to be able to meet the demand to get to the banks, and people really don't realize that, those funds need to get from point A to point B and what the demand might be for organizations like ourselves.
Well, I hadn't even thought about that. That's really something. I know from talking to banks, if you can get a banker to level with you, which is not exactly an easy thing to do, they're scared to death about a run. And
right.
I don't blame them. Caller, can you hold on through the break?
Sure, I'll try to. I got on a cell phone here.
All right, well then why don't we call halt to it here? And the information you gave me is valuable. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, take care. And Leah, hold on. We'll be right back.
The Kingdom of Nye. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. From east of the Rockies, call Art at 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, at 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may fax Art at area code 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
What I think everybody's trying to do is to walk a very fine line between instilling a little bit of fear in you and getting you to begin to prepare and recognize that that might be a good thing to do, but not panic you. And that is, in fact, the most efficient way for you to operate. Have a little bit of a motivating fear. Don't panic. Simply start to the right things. If you do that and you can help a neighbor, then we might all get through it, if in fact it happens. And I just don't know what else to say. Leah Danks does. She's got quite a bit of information for you, and we'll continue in that vein in a moment. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. This is interesting. This is a fax that I just received, Leah. It's from Bill in San Diego, who loves the video streaming, but goes on to say, the Fed is stockpiling cash for Y2 panic. They are now talking about an extra $200 billion in cash in anticipation of year-end bank withdrawals by Americans concerned about the year 2000 problem. But Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan says people should feel safe leaving their money in financial institutions. The most sensible thing to do is leave it where it is, he told the Senate Banking Committee on Tuesday. There's almost no conceivable way that computers will break down, records of people's savings accounts would disappear, no conceivable way that would happen, he says.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because I have quotes from him in my book and on my webpage that are somewhat at variance with what he's saying now.
In what sense?
Well, earlier he said, and I can't quote it exactly, but he said something to the effect of, well, the fact is we just can't know what will happen.
You know, Leah, I think that the Fed chairman, the president of the United States, and government officials have no choice.
No.
Now,
I mean, would you want to be in their shoes?
Have no choice but to make these kinds of statements.
Right.
And do the best job they can to see to it that a bank run doesn't occur.
Right.
That is their job. And if they were out there scaring people, they would, if Greenspan were to open his mouth and say, look, your bank account records might disappear,
mm-hmm.
You wouldn't have to wait for July or August October. Tomorrow.
It would happen tomorrow.
It would happen tomorrow.
If everybody could just hang tight and trust the powers that be, we could get through it anyway. But there's always, you know, those who won't, and they can start something. But basically, our entire banking system is nothing but a trust system.
Trust. And that's true of law enforcement, too, you know.
I mean, you know, there's no real backing to most of our money. It has value because we say it does.
That's right.
And everybody agrees that it does. And as soon as somebody says the king has no clothes, then it all starts toppling. And that's what they're trying desperately to prevent because the other scenario is too horrible to contemplate. So
right.
If you were in that position, you'd do the same thing.
You bet. First time caller line, you're on the air with Leah Danks and Art Bell. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. Where are you?
I am west of the Rockies.
Okay.
And I'm a banker. And
you're a banker?
Yes.
Okay.
And I wanted to let you know that you're correct and that banks are concerned about runs, and we're not so much concerned about 1-1-2000 because we know, as do people who are informed, that our industry is probably the most prepared of any industry in the country. However, October, November, and December are the times when we're concerned that others won't believe that. And some of the things we're talking about are really, what are you going to do with cash after January 1 if there is a problem? You can't eat it. It's a lousy heat source for burning.
Yes.
And, you know, really, if you're really that concerned about a problem, then perhaps you should be using your cash to buy what you think you might need after 1-1-2000 before that. And that way you'll keep the money circulating in the banking system, and we wouldn't have to worry so much about runs.
I'll have to agree with you. I think
Makes
investing
sense.
In a lifestyle is very wise at this point. In hard goods and things you can eat and use.
And
maybe
trade.
Sell or barter.
Yeah.
Or help others with.
Yep.
But I don't want my comments to confuse you that I am concerned, because personally I am not concerned. And I read a lot of things on the other side of it that say, sure, there may be some problems, but it won't interrupt the major systems within power companies and banks. And I don't want anyone to confuse my comments with the industry's panic, because there isn't that much panic within the industry after 1-1-2000.
It's before. You guys are worried about the last 2 or 3 months of the year.
Yeah, we're concerned,
mm-hmm.
And we hope that people like you, Art, can can help us in that respect.
It's such a fine line to walk, because even you, sir, point out that while there might not be a lot of use for cash, there certainly is going to be use for cash in the last two or three months of the year, even if it's just to go out and buy things with. It is our general understanding that banks can cover about 2% of cash requests.
Yeah, but if you're going out and buying things, you're recirculating that money. That money comes back to the bank.
That's true. That's true. So that's good advice, and I appreciate your input.
Okay.
Thank you. That's really good advice. And it's solid advice, because he's right. If the problem protracts, and there really is a problem, cash is going to be less useful every day that goes by after the power goes off, if that were to happen. What will be of use will be things. Things you can eat, things you can drink, things that you can trade. Good advice. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Leah Danks and Art Bell.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Cindy from Pahrump.
Pahrump?
Yes.
Wow.
And what I was thinking, getting back to the water storage, would be a real good idea would be to store water in your washing machine, too. And you could use it for, I don't know.
Well, I don't know about you, but...
Well, you could use it, like, to wash your hands in, or...
That's true.
You know, kind
that's
of
true.
Like medicinal,
I never thought of that.
Medicinal purposes,
just,
or...
Yeah, just,
you could fill up your washing machine and use it for cleaning.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
That's good.
If you knew timing-wise, ahead of time.
Right, yeah.
You know, so that you could do that. Another really good source for water is a water bed.
A what?
A water bed.
Oh, a water bed.
It holds about 400 gallons.
Well, what would you have to put in there
Well, you'd have to drain it and refill it with clean water.
Right.
And not put any, just a little Clorox or something in it to help keep, fungus from growing in there. But it could be done.
Yeah, because it would be like a water bladder.
Huh?
It would be like a water bladder.
Yeah.
It sure would.
And I would filter it anyway before I drank it.
Yeah.
You could probably wash and bathe in it, but I'd still filter most of my drinking water because, like Art says, you cannot afford to get sick.
Well, I'm glad you came out with this book because it's so important.
Well, I hope it helps people. I just, had a really strong drive to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I sat at the computer for, 18 hours a day for 7 months, trying to get it put together and organized. And I realize other people just don't have the time to do that kind of research and
yes.
organization. So I hope it does help.
Well, that's all I have to say.
Being here in Pahrump, you probably have a well, don't you?
Yes, I do. And I'm trying to figure, I've heard there is a way that you can get water out of your well without electricity.
There is a hand, I've seen it in one of the either Layman's or Cumberland General catalog. They're both mentioned in my book, How to Get Them.
Uh-huh.
And I believe there is a way that you can, even in a small opening well, that was drilled for electric pumps, that you can lower this by hand and raise it. It would be laborious, and it would take a long time to get much water up, but yeah, you could do
well,
it.
Well, here in Pahrump, to give you an example, even though they drill down to about 160 feet, they actually hit water, or the water level is much higher than that, and so the water level in the well actually rises, I think, to, I'm no expert in this area, but 90 feet, 80 feet, something like that.
Well, Art, there's someone that's talking about some kind of device that you can use, and you supposedly can call somebody in town. I don't have all the information on it.
What, here in Pahrump?
Uh-huh. And I always get in on the tail end on it.
All right.
And I'd love to find out about it. Because,
I will check into it. I'll see what I can find out for
really like to know.
People who have wells everywhere. Thank you. Because one thing that people with wells can afford to do is to share water with others. And water is so prime for life that if you have a way of removing a well water, you can really help a lot of people. You'd agree with that, Leah?
Oh, absolutely. I think a good well and also a large filter. We've gotten the largest filter that they make that'll do 13,000 gallons for it needs a change of filters.
Mm-hmm.
And I figure that even if you don't use that yourself, you can always provide others.
Right, you are. All right, east of the Rockies, you're on there with Leah Danks and Art Bell.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Where are you?
In Toronto, Canada.
Toronto, all right.
Yes, and I want to mention about the, there's a terrible ice storm last year in Quebec. Maybe you remember about hearing about that. There were 2 months without power.
Of course I remember, yes.
Yes, and you know, it would be wonderful if people could call from that area, because I heard some amazing stories about people's ingenuity, how they survived that period of 2 months without electricity.
You know what? We will do an open line show here shortly on Y2K. And when we do, we'll solicit people from that area, because you're exactly right. They went a couple of months without power.
And people were making, like one girl said, she made a piece of toast using a hanger and a candle. and she had, like, she had to wait a while for the toast to brown, but there was a way she developed to make poached eggs and toast using candle power, making a little poacher of some sort.
Oh, yes.
But there were things that people did that were not good. Like one man put a roll of toilet paper in a drum, and he put some sort of lighter fluid or something on, and he was trying to keep himself warm with that. And people were setting their houses on fire. So what you say is very true. They need to think about these things and think about a way of preparedness.
All right, I appreciate your call. She really is right about that.
One of the main things I discovered, Art, was that you really need to educate yourself. There's some things people need to know, and there's a lot of wonderful things out there that you can use that people don't know about.
Okay, I want to take 1 second out, Leah, to promo a couple things before the show ends. One is that I'm going to be doing Dreamland later today with Brad Steiger. That'll be at 1 o'clock Pacific time. 1 o'clock Pacific time today, I'll be doing an interview with Brad Steiger, and I believe that Broadcast.com is going to carry the the G2 video as well. Now, I'll have to confirm that, but either way, the audio certainly is available, so if you have Broadcast.com, you're going to want to be here at 1 o'clock Pacific time for Brad Steiger, and should you call in, you can then hear yourself on Sunday as it is broadcast nationwide. So glad to have you. Join us if you wish, 1 o'clock Pacific time today for Dreamland. And then one other thing that I need to promote is what we're going to do tomorrow night. This just came up at the last minute. We're going to have Kenny Young here. Now, you may recall in the wonderful Communion show on NBC, Confirmation, excuse me, you may recall one of the most dramatic stories was Trumbull County and the police in Trumbull County. Remember that? Well, guess what? The audio tapes from Trumbull County actually ran about an hour and 15 minutes, somewhere in there. We have, I say we, my guest will have the complete Trumbull County tapes. And we are going to broadcast them tomorrow night. You're not going to want to miss that. All right, back to the phone lines. And west of the Rockies, you're on the air with Leah Danks and Art Bell. Hello.
Hello, Art and Leah. It's good to talk to you. A couple of quick things. I've been in contact with the couple of people I know that work for some large telecommunications companies. And one of the things that they're worried about, and these are people that plan for contingencies and whatnot, they're worried about the government coming in and possibly confiscating their generators once they've all been upgraded and taken care of and compliant and whatnot. And that's a pretty major thing that they're concerned about. And then the other thing I wanted to mention, which is interesting, the state of Alaska, by the way, I'm Keith in Anchorage.
Oh, in Anchorage. Hold on. One thing at a time, Keith.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's quite all right. Leah, what do you know about plans to confiscate either generators or food or anything else for that matter?
I don't know about plans to confiscate. I do have a friend fairly well placed in, you know, high circles who emailed me last fall that the president had already signed 6 or 7 documents that would allow them to nationalize anything they wanted to. So that's already in place. Now, whether they will or not and why they will, I don't know.
Caller?
Yeah. It's interesting. They're worried about it. They mentioned something about that that legislation there, but they're so worried about it. The state of Alaska just now approved $18.5 million to fix all of the Y2K problems in Alaska, and they're just now getting started on it. Mm. I thought you'd be interested in hearing that, Art.
Well, that's nice that they did that. And
about
I don't
5 years too late.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, caller. Thank you very much. Gary North, and to be fair, not just Gary, but a lot of other people say that it doesn't. Don't hope that it's all going to get fixed because the code is broken, period. There is not time to fix it no matter how hard we work. This is an event that is going to take place, like it or not. There's no stopping it. I don't know that I'm that sure, but I suspect he's right. How about you, Leah?
You know, one of your previous guests, Neil Donald Walsh,
yes,
said something in his third book that I remember a lot. He said people create in three ways. They create as part of a group, like mass consciousness. They create unconsciously, usually through fear or prior programming, and they create intentionally and deliberately and very consciously. And it seems to me that mass consciousness, or the society that we live in, created this problem 50 years ago. And at this point, it's not a matter of whether I believe it's going to happen or not. It is a situation that exists. What is facing us now is how we respond to this problem.
Mm-hmm.
Do we respond from unconscious fear programs? Do we just go along with the group? Or do we deliberately and consciously and intentionally chart a course for ourselves so that we can respond wisely to what is coming?
What do you suspect?
About...
About which way it's going to go, yes.
Well, I just think it's up to anybody that has any intimation of a problem to get the word out and not to worry about what people think about them, because if I'm wrong, I'm more than willing to be wrong. I'm not attached to that at all, like you said, but I certainly don't want to look back and say I could have, should have done something.
And didn't.
And I didn't.
Mm-hmm. I feel exactly the same way about it. I guess I'm getting too old. I don't care anymore.
Big job.
It is, yeah. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Leah Danks and Art Bell. Hi.
Art?
Yes, sir.
Okay, just a quick comment about generating some small amount of power for the household.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if you all are familiar with these up systems for the computers.
Yes,
small power backups.
Certainly am, yes.
I've got some courses in electronics, and I've set up a system to where I've taken a standard automotive alternator.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a built-in regulator, hooked it up to the battery, and mounted it to a belt and one of these small bicycles that you ride at home,
mm-hmm.
to charge the battery back up. And if something does happen, at least we can ride the bicycle, charge the battery up, and power a few things around the house.
Well,
you know, there's a book called Pedal Power.
Pedal Power,
right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a great little book, and it's an old but tried and true way to keep a little electricity.
And another, you know, you mentioned another valuable resource, and that is the UPS that you use for a computer backup or whatever. If we experience rolling brownouts, then you would have an opportunity during the time when you had power to charge UPS, which would give you some limited, not current stuff, but, you know, certainly something that would keep a light going for a while, that kind of thing. So that's a good idea. He just gave me a very, very good idea.
There's a lot of very clever people out there, and I think if we can get, you know, via the Internet especially, people to exchanging and talking about these things, a lot of people can come up with some good ideas.
Good point. First-time caller line, I think you're going to be the last one. You're on the air with Leah Danks. Hi.
Yes, Art?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Leah.
Yes.
Yes, I'm wondering, there's a lot of people who are claiming that it would be safe to be at least 200 miles out of your major metropolitan areas. What do you think about that?
Well, probably true. I don't really want to sound too negative, but I think if you're prepared to live all the time in the fashion that could sustain you that far out, then you'd probably be able to get to the year 2000 that way. But if you just leave the city and go out into the countryside at the last minute, you know, you're going to be in trouble.
All right. Leah, you've been a real gem. Listen, folks, if you want Leah's book, and you should, it's called Building Your Ark, Your Personal Survival Guide to the Year 2000 Crisis. Call 1-888-240-9074. That's 1-888-240-9074. Leah, we're out of time. We're going to have you back again. Thank you.
It was my pleasure, Art.
Good night.
Thank you.
Not an easy show to do in a lot of ways, but I think an important program. If you'd like to get a copy of this show, you can call right now or anytime, 1-800-917-4278. That's 1-800-917-4278. For the inaugural night of video streaming, live streaming on the net, I'm Art Bell. Good night.